Blog Talk.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Anything's possible.
RSD Renegade Radio. Where real guys talk real sports. Allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth.
I want winners.
What's your name, boy?
Mark the Game Changer.
What's your name, boy?
D-Well.
Now, ladies and gentlemen.
T.O.T. Sports Ph.D.
The world famous.
Ray.
They are who we thought they were.
We need more dollars.
RSG. Renegade Radio. The floodgates is about to open.
Everybody has an opinion.
A man must have a code.
We're taking RSG to the next level.
Hello. You play to win the game.
You could gripe about Mike's game, but I don't see shooting percentage being hit.
I mean, I'm not griping the third overall player on my list.
Nah, I blame it on Nintendo. It's provocative. He's real making excuses. You know, we're not going to make any excuses.
You need to move more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. Can't wait. Can you dig it, sucker?
All right. If you can dig it, let it forever be dug. You are now listening to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. Also known as RSG Renegade Radio. I am your host, one-third of the illustrious three-man booth, Marcus the Game Changer. I'm going to give you a quick rundown, and then I'm going to introduce the rest of the squad. Tonight, we got a heavy show, huge show, big show for the RSG crew. We've been talking about taking it to the next level, and we've done that tonight. Coming on early in the show, we have Coach Brett Bielema of the Wisconsin Badgers football program. He will be joining us tonight. We also have several coaches from the NCAA tourney lined up. We have Montana, who will be playing number 4 Wisconsin. They're number 13 seed in the NCAA tournament. Assistant coach Bill Evans will be joining us tonight. We have UNC Asheville, who will be going against the Syracuse Orangemen, or the Orange, as they're now known. Eddie Beidenbach, he'll be joining us. We have Ray McCallum from the University of Detroit Mercy, along with Doug Anderson, a Detroit Mercy player who will also be joining us. We have South Dakota State assistant coach Rob Klinkapis joining us. And then we also have VCU, who will be playing Wichita State in the battle of two powerhouse mid-majors. This first weekend of the tourney, their assistant coach Mike Rhodes will be joining us. So we have all that lined up for you tonight. So stay tuned. Get on with the Real Sports Guys. Sit back, relax, and get prepped for the tourney. It's March, it's mad, and we bring in the funk. All right, so we're going to keep it real tight. We're going to keep it real, real workmanlike around here tonight. We're going to get into everything. But, again, before we do that, I have to introduce the other two-thirds of the illustrious three-man booth. My man, my left-hand man, right-hand man, COT, Sports PhD, what it do, man?
Christmas has come early in March. Fellas, I have some provocative NCAA picks. Y'all going to be trying to throw stones at me, but I got facts to back them up.
Okay.
Boy, you got facts, huh?
Uh-oh.
You got
uh-oh.
Facts.
You got
facts. You know, this is what I think about your facts.
I don't have facts to back this up.
Don't get caught up now. Don't promise facts. Don't promise facts. It's 2012. We will fact check. All right, we will fact check, okay? The other member of the illustrious three-man booth, I have the man, D. Wills. Holla at the people.
Man, you know I've been waiting for tonight for a long time. Excited to have Coach on, Coach Bielema. I think he is one of the most exciting coaches in the country in terms of what he's able to do with his program. And then the interviews that we have tonight, getting us ready for the tournament that's already kicked off, it's kicking off, and all the excitement. I'm excited about that. We even have, the Division II number one team we're going to be talking to later on tonight as well. So this is going to be heavy, heavy, heavy show. And you're going to be able to get these full interviews on realsportsguys.com. So we'll be posting those tomorrow so that you can get a feel for it. But, hey, you know what we've been talking about, Marcus. This is it. This is what we've been talking about, trying to take the show to the next level, and I'm happy about it.
Yeah, buddy. This is our March Madness, and we trying to step it up and bring it and keep it live as we get into this. So we got things going. We're getting things popping. Before we get into our interviews, I just want to, man, there's a lot that's been going on. While we effort our guests, there's a lot that's been going on we want to get into real quick because we're not going to have a whole lot of time to get into a lot of other things that are going on in sports because we are heavy NCAA tournament. The Bucks made a trade today. The Bears made a trade today. So there's a lot going on in the sports world. NFL free agency just kicked off. There's a ton of things going on. It's a real exciting time. March is a great month to be a sports fan. You been paying attention to anything going on out there, D. Wills? Anything caught your eye? Any moves that have been made?
Well, I mean, obviously there is a lot going on in terms of the kinds of moves that have been going on and stuff. You know, the Peyton Manning deal that's been going on has just been incredible. Watching how that's been unfolding this week with the thought of Tebow moving again, which could be incredible. I mean, how stories have changed and turned the table. To me, that's been an amazing run when you think about the fact that we've had Tebow mania, and it could be over already. When you think about Monta Ellis moving over to the Bucks tonight, being traded, that's a blockbuster deal that just would happen. So there's a lot. I mean, March Madness is kind of this intersection of kind of NBA season is getting ramping up down the stretch. We got trade deadlines happening, and then we got this great college basketball happening, and then we got college football repping up for the spring ball. So this is my favorite time of the year.
Yeah, it is. This is what I call sports Christmas, man. It is like it's a sports fans Christmas. You get a little bit of everything. You got the NFL, and we missed this part of last year so dearly. But you have the NFL free agent spree. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers just signed Vincent Jackson. The Bears traded for Brandon Marshall, reuniting him with Jay Cutler. You got deals flying all over the place. The Saints are keeping Colston. They re-signed him. So there's a ton of things going on in the NFL. A lot of guys getting cut as teams try and get under the cap with the new rules and the new system that's in place. There's a ton going on. You just keep your eyes out. We're gonna try to get into it and digest it all next week because this week is so gonna it's gonna be so heavy with basketball. That's gonna be a beautiful thing. But yeah, I'm reading that the Bulls are trying to acquire Pau Gasol. Is that a good move or a bad move in your eyes?
Well, I think for the Bulls, it gives them another score. I think one of the things that when you think about, even though they made some moves in the offseason, Derrick Rose is still carrying a lot of weight. And what Powell gives them is a low post presence that can just add one more score in there. And then my guy with the receding hairline, down low, Boozer. you know, if he doesn't come down the stretch, you have a guy like Powell who has championship pedigree, who can deliver down the stretch and deliver in big games. And then he's playing along, you know, Noah in a pretty much, pretty powerful front line. So, you know, I think that, you know, I think that's a really good move for him. And then for, you know, for Powell, again, I think it gets him out of the circus of L.A. and gets him into a more stable, you know, environment.
Here's a $5 million question though. Does it make LA better?
I'm not sure if it makes LA better because you know I'm not sure about it making LA better. I think it makes Chicago better. I'm not sure about LA, and a lot of it's just you know you just don't know you know how Kobe's going to wear down because he's logged so many minutes. And how that's going to play in the playoffs as he, you know, you face teams like Oklahoma City and some of these other teams. You don't know how that's all going because Kobe is still the glue. And, you know, you don't know how, you know, logging these minutes, you know, really doing what he's been doing this season, how that's going to affect him when you get into, a series, seven-game series.
Yeah, any trade involving Gasol that doesn't bring back either second tier or elite level point guard, I think is a bad move on the Lakers' part.
Yeah.
What makes the Lakers special right now is the whole twin tower element that they have with Gasol and Bynum. It makes them a real tough matchup. And if you remove that, then they're just a run of the mill average team. And I don't know if they're good enough to be average right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think if they if they would have held on to Odom. Then I would think that they may have some more options there, but I think that Odom trade is one that, you know, even though it was a port of money, you know, for what they might want to accomplish this season might come back to haunt them.
Yeah. You know, I agree. I think again, what made them special was their length. And when they moved Odom, it was saying bye-bye to that. And not to get any pieces back to me, even, you know, if you're making that trade with Dallas, you got to ask for Roddy Bois or somebody back, you know.
Yes.
You got to ask for a little something back other than a trade exemption that you may or may not be able to use.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But, yeah, we're going to keep an eye on those kind of things as they develop. You know, Thursday's a trade deadline in the NBA. The NFL free agency is just kicking off. Just kicked off today at 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. But right now, I'm going to swing it to my man, D. Wills, and he's going to get us going with our first guest tonight.
Well, you know I'm excited about this, and we've been talking about it for a few weeks now. And when you think about our guest today in his first six seasons, he has 60 wins, six bowl appearances, five times his team has been a final AP top 25. He has two Big Ten titles. Two trips to the Rose Bowl. His career winning percentage is .759, is fourth best in the country amongst FBS coaches with at least five seasons of experience. In his first 18 games, he won 17 of 18 games, which is second best start by head coach in Big Ten history. His team won the inaugural Big Ten football championship, defeating Michigan State Spartans 42-39 in a thriller in Indianapolis. So, hey, let's give a warm RSG welcome to head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers, Brett Bielema. How you doing, Brett?
I'm doing all right. Officially been married for 4 days, so it's kind of been a whirlwind, but it's good.
Woo! Well, the thing about it is you joined the RSG, a few guys here who understand the value of marriage, and so we want to welcome you to the fold.
I appreciate it.
You know, Coach, before we get into, you know, I know you're going to be kicking off the spring game on the 28th, in April. Before we get in that, you know, you were 11-3 last year. You finished 10th in the final AP poll. As I said in the opening, you won the inaugural Big Ten championship game. But you were really two plays away from making a bid for a national championship game. You know, as you think about and kind of summarize the 2011 season for the Badgers, how have you been reflecting on that season?
Well, you know, really after the season's done, after that final bowl game and the game that you play in, obviously the last 2 years for us, the Rose Bowl, you really have a time there during January where you do a lot of, you know, recruiting, a lot of traveling. I believe I had 27 flights from January 3rd until the signing date, the 1st of February. And that was a lot of time on the airplane to think about things. And, you know, I don't know if I've ever been in a season where there were the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows as much as there was last year. I mean, obviously, I think back, you know, the first Big Ten game to welcome Nebraska into the Big Ten and for us to play the way we did and really handle them pretty well. And, you know, that night game in Camp Randall, we all know how special that is. Then take a bye week and come back and lose, you know, to Michigan State the way we did at the end of the game was gut-wrenching. To come back and play your tail off in Columbus, another night game, and to lose at the last minute like we did there was really a testing point, I think, for the chemistry of our entire program. You know, how the players are going to respond, how the coach is going to respond, and obviously responded very, very well. Put ourselves in a November that we needed to win every game, that put us in December to win another game against Michigan State to get an opportunity to go to the Rose Bowl, and it happened. And then obviously to lose a Rose Bowl, you know, as hard-fought a game as it was to such a good team, it just took a couple of weeks to get that out of your system, but our kids have been great coming back so far.
When I think about the season, you had two dynamic offensive players in Monty Ball and Russell Wilson. I mean, Monty Ball had, you know, 1,923 yards rushing, 33 touchdowns, Heisman finalist. Russell Wilson, 40 touchdowns, you know, 30 passing, 6 rushing, 1 receiving. You kind of, in this season, shattered this notion that Wisconsin football is 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Talk a little bit about those two players in this season and what that meant to have those two type of players on your squad.
Well, then I think first off, you know, the thing that both of them would tell you is they probably enjoyed the other one's success as much as anything. They really are really selfless kids that understand the value of chemistry and teamwork and working together. But I would say Monty Ball, you know, he's a guy that really going back to a year ago, January, I saw him restructure his body and you know, dedicate himself to the you know, nutritional side and the training side as hard as any player I've ever seen, and really reap the rewards because of it. I mean, just the way he's sculpted his body and got himself ready to play. And then the guy that added obviously a lot to our team this year, Russell Wilson, is just a you know, I know everybody's going to think it's coach speak or it's coaching cliche. As good a football player is, he's an even better person and an even better human being. Just great chemistry, brought it to the locker room right away. The kids, you know, electing captain 4 weeks later, he's so dynamic as a leader and as a guy that can really, you know, his two best quarters of football might have been the fourth quarter against Ohio State and Michigan State. I mean, he played
and
got us into those games, and all they ended up being losses. That was really, in my mind, stands out as some of his best football. So both great kids. I think you're going to hear about Russell next year in the NFL a lot earlier than most people think. And then Imani, when he gets his time a year from now, I think it'll be the exact same.
When you think about it, a lot of folks thought that Monty should have moved on to the NFL, and he's decided to stay. What was his decision making process? What happened? You know, how did you, I guess, talk to him, work with him through that decision making process? But what was it about for him coming back to play again?
Well, make no mistake, he was the best recruiting job of the year. I mean, no doubt about that. He was on campus, but we wanted to make him stay. And you know what? I think the thing that I believe really came through to the forefront was just complete, honest approach to everything we did. I brought his parents in during the bye week, brought him in actually last spring for the first time and talked about, you know, the things that we could do for him to help get the best information out there. And then during our bye week, we sat down again and just kind of talked about, hey, this is where we're at. We'll fill out the NFL paperwork to get an early draft status. And then he really kind of set in his mind, and I told him, you got to come up with a number. You know, what number will come back if you want to go, and what number comes back will you want to stay? And if it was a first-rounder, I think he was gone for sure. You know, if it was a second-round grade, he probably still would have been gone. And he came back as a strong third-round grade, and he had kind of made a decision with his parents to stay if that was the case and get his degree and finish his work here at Wisconsin before moving on. So I think just the whole approach was pretty smart by his process.
One of the things that I think that, and as we start to talk about the entering class of players, I was listening to a lot of conversation when they were talking about on signing day and who had the top class, and they were interviewing the expert. And I remember someone saying, you know, we're not going to know what these players are going to do until about 3 or 4 years. We'll know what this class is all about. But we can't get so caught up in the rankings. And he used Wisconsin as an example of a program that has produced a number of players who have gone on to go in the NFL. I mean, Wisconsin players are all over the NFL, and really talked about, you know, the development of players. And that made me think a little bit about, you know, how do you approach, because I thought that was a compliment to a lot of the work that you and your staff are doing. How do you approach the recruiting class? And before we get into the players that you have coming in, you know, what are the kinds of things you look for when you're recruiting players?
Well, I think there's three critical things we try to evaluate. You know, obviously they got to be a good enough football player. There's somebody that we care about and think that they can help us win a championship. That should be pretty easy to see on film. You know, and I really don't care who's recruiting them. I don't care if they have 20 offers. I don't care if they have 2 offers or 0 offers. What we do is make our own evaluation off film, and we kind of have always looked for that underrated guy, maybe that guy that is just going to fit our type. And then the other two areas, obviously, besides the football skills, is, you know, academically, how do they check out? You know, to be here in Wisconsin, you have to be a certain type of student, not just to get admitted, but also to stay in school. You know, it doesn't do you any good for a kid to be here in year three. He's no longer around because he couldn't handle the academics. They're going to be their best players in years 3, 4, and 5, and you want them to be here. And then, you know, the third thing is just the social element. I really believe in a couple things. I always tell my coaches, hey, if you're recruiting this kid and you're wondering or not whether he's really kind of our type of kid, whether he can fit into Madison, just ask yourself, would you let him babysit your children in your own home for 2 nights when you weren't there? You know, it's a simple question, but it's easy for people to answer, you know, and I think that one part, we're never going to trade in an ounce of character to try and get a better football player. I think it's important for you to, you know, bring kids that you like to be around. So I'll go back to last year. I thought this was a great stat. You know, this last season was my sixth year as a head coach. So it's, you know, my class, everybody in that room were guys that we've decided we wanted in there. I didn't inherit any of them. I brought them in, made the decisions. Well, the class before that was my first championship season, and it was my fifth year. So it was kids that, again, was my first 5 full years of being with them. Mm-hmm. And when the NFL signed, you know, first day of NFL camp, there were 14 rookies on NFL rosters that were from the University of Wisconsin.
Wow.
And put that in perspective, the next highest class was Alabama. The next highest team was Alabama, had 8. So we had almost double the second highest total. And at first it alarmed me because I'm like, boy, that's a lot of players that aren't here. But it did show me, you know, hey, we went on to win another championship without them. But also that class, when they were as freshmen, they were rated 8th in the Big Ten. I believe they were like 60th in the country. And they had 14 guys in the NFL. It just made a huge statement to me. And this year, I think we'll do the same. This year, I would bet we have a minimum of 12 players that sign NFL contracts, might have as many as 16 of our seniors. So it's really a good time to take a step back and realize, hey, don't really buy into what's going on around you. Just go ahead and, you know, believe in what's in front of you. And our kids really do buy into that.
And you had a record 6 players playing the Senior Bowl, right?
Yeah, that was the highest ever. There's also, we had 23 All Big Ten academic All Big Ten players, which was the highest in school history. You know, I do believe there's a correlation to that stuff. And one of the best phone calls I got in January, second week of January, I was on a recruiting trip and I got a voicemail from our academic support staff, and we actually set a fall semester entire roster. My entire 120-man roster had set a school semester GPA record in the fall semester, which,
okay.
You know, I mean, that stuff, it all goes together, you know. I really believe that, you know, you just, and some of these kids, you know, don't come in, you know, I'm not saying every one of the kids is top 10% in his class, but if you get a kid, you know, that has got, you know, a decent academic background and he shows great signs of being able to work for what he wants, you know, and then he gets into our support system, those kids just flourish because they see themselves having success, and it really makes a big difference. It gives them great confidence.
Now, you have 12 scholarship players coming in, and one of them, obviously, J.J. Watt's younger brother,
yeah,
amongst that crew. But talk a little bit about and plus you and people don't know as well as you place a lot of value also in your preferred walk-on. So some of these folks who are coming in as well. But talk about some highlights in this entering class of new
backers. Well, we are excited. Derek was actually in last year's freshman class, so he's been on campus for a year. Looked great about him. But in this latest class, we added an in-state prospect that we're very excited about, Vince Beagle. A kid from up in Wisconsin Rapids. His dad, Rocky Deagle, was an All-American at BYU and was a highly, highly recruited kid, and had him in camp the last couple summers. I think he'll be a perfect fit. We'll play him at linebacker and get excited to get him on campus. We signed three freshmen that are actually left school early January as seniors and are currently enrolled in the second spring semester. The first one, Dan Volz, lineman out of Chicago, who has been very impressive, weighs about 300 pounds and has developed really, really nicely for a high school kid coming in and fits in right away. And we also have a kid by the name of Vontae Jackson, who's from Kenosha Bradford, a running back who unfortunately blew out his knee ACL the first game of his senior year, but has really done a nice job in rehab and it should be able to go with us in the fall and see where he's at. And then we also had a young man, Hugs Atenae, from down in Boyd Anderson, or I'm sorry, Plantation, Florida, and has really been impressive through fall or through these first couple of weeks of winter drills. He's a corner who's very athletic, very gifted, and excited. So I always joke, it's kind of nice. We got two kids out of Florida. One was Hugs Atenae, and then we got a Reggie Love. Anytime you got a Love and a Hugs coming out of Florida, we're good. Reggie Love is a wide receiver that we're very excited about as well.
Now, you've made some inroads into Florida. And can you talk a little bit about how you've been able to kind of work state of Florida, you know, and get folks to come up in Wisconsin? You know, I worked in admissions and recruiting and sometimes getting, you know, kids from warm weather states to look at the state of Wisconsin is sometimes a challenge. So how have you really worked some of those and get some players out of Florida?
Well, the first thing is you have them visit in June and July. That's a very important element. We don't bring them in December and January too often. But I think, again, it's like what kind of kid are you looking for? For instance, you know, you take James White, who's, you know, a great player for us, comes from a private school, St. Thomas Aquinas, who I brought in two of his roommates, Connor O'Neill, as well as Desmond Southward. Des is in the business school as a junior, and Connor is as well. And as you know, And working here in Wisconsin, that's not an easy thing to do. So, you know, two kids are already in there. But again, it's, you know, all of them come from, you know, two-parent homes. All of them come from, we do recruit a lot of the private schools, or we look for a certain type of kid that'll fit into our environment. I think that's very important. And I think the part that, you know, South Florida isn't really any different from recruiting a kid out of Jersey or recruiting a kid out of Ohio. You know, they're going to leave their home state, but, you know, you got to be smart about where you're going. For instance, in Florida alone, I learned this one being an assistant coach. I started recruiting to South Florida, you know, like Fort Lauderdale, Miami, and Palm Beach. So I said, well, this is going good. Why don't I expand a little further? So I went into Orlando for a couple of years, and I'd get in these recruiting battles, and you just couldn't beat, you know, the Carolina schools, the Georgia schools, as consistently as you could with a South Florida kid. Because the South Florida kid, I mean, he's down there now. He's going to have to travel 12, 14 hours to go to school in Georgia. Well, the Orlando kids only got to travel 6 or 7, and it does make a difference. There's almost like this little line across the state that kids will leave and go anywhere in the country, especially in the Big Ten, where they can get great exposure.
Okay. Coach, one of the things I wanted to hit before we let you go, one of the hardest things, I mean, you've done an incredible job, and we talked about what you accomplished in your first 6 years, but I think the most difficult thing you've done is to follow a legend like Barry Alvarez and to begin to develop your own brand and your own kind of legacy within the program. Talk a little bit about how that process has happened and how Coach Alvarez has also played a role in you establishing, you know, this as your program.
Absolutely. I think, you know, from my initial conversation with Coach Alvarez when we talked about this transition, he was very adamant about, you know, putting my own stamp or my own brand in the program. We talked about how there's definitely some things that work here at Wisconsin that should be kind of standard and move forward, and those were easy things for me to witness 2 years as an assistant. You know, just the brand of football, the way we have to prepare and train, what our advantages can be. You know, we may not be the most physically talented, but we definitely can be the most physically tough and mentally tough. I think that's a part that's carried through. And then as far as the transition, I believe my staff and my staff has been, you know, on a revolving process as well, you know, just with new faces, new people. But we stuck true to what Wisconsin really had been defined as, you know, hardworking, tough, don't beat yourselves, play smart, play physical, and you know, recruit a certain type of kid, a certain type of character that is never going to waver. So I know there's people from the outside world that think Wisconsin is, you know, the same thing it's always been, but it really is completely evolved into something I think competes on a national basis, you know, in a world of college football that really has changed, you know, over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. So it's been a lot of fun. You know, one of our biggest fans and one of our biggest supporters is Coach Alvarez. I mean, obviously as an AD, to have a guy in that role that sat in your shoes and knows how difficult it can be is a truly huge advantage. And something that I'm blessed with as a head coach here on a daily basis.
Well, Coach, we do want to wish you well as you get into spring practice and into the spring season. And we'd love to invite you back as you get closer to the opening of the season. We certainly enjoyed having you on with us at The Real Sports Guys, and thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Appreciate the offer. Thank you very much. I'm Wisconsin.
All right. University of Wisconsin Badger head coach Brett Bielema. You know, that's what I'm talking about. This is someone who's making noise nationally as it relates to college football. It's a program that has really established itself, you know, as a national power, and he's put together a really good team there. When you start to think about the lineage of coaches, Paul Chris, who's his former offensive coordinator, I believe, is at Pittsburgh. His former defensive coordinator is head coach at Northern Illinois University. And so this is only in 6 seasons that these folks are going on to getting head coaching positions. So excited about having him on. We're going to have a little bit of reaction and going back and forth. Game changer. You had a chance to hear Coach Bielema talk. You know, you and I are very familiar with Wisconsin and the program. You know, I'd love to get your thoughts.
You know, it was really great to hear him talk about the recruiting philosophy of the program. Because, you know, as fans of the program, we all look at what the profile of every recruiting class that comes into Wisconsin. When you're looking at that, they're always like 60, 55, 50. They never have those glitz and glamour recruiting classes. But in the end, the coaching staff, Bielema and his guys, always get guys who they always coach them up. They always get them to the league. They always get them to compete, which is an amazing thing because they never come in with that gravitas, with the big name. They don't come in like that. You know, they get kids who are good football players who they can develop, who fit into their system, and then they get them and they coach them up. And I think that's it was just really interesting for me to be able to hear him talk about what they look for when he talked about integrity and those kind of things, and what the profile of a Wisconsin recruit is. Because again, they're not the perennial 4-star, 5-star national big name guys. They're not going to be guys you see playing in the Under Armour games or, you know, any other end of the season national all-star games, who, you know, they're not signing day cats who you see on ESPN with the hats trying to pick a hat. These are guys that usually fly under the radar. They're good football players. They're quality football players, and Wisconsin figures out a way to get them in and make them better. And that was real interesting to see because, again, it's something that as a fan base we sometimes are concerned about because we see that and we're saying, well, we're not getting guys. We're not competing with the Alabamas and the TCUs and the Texases and the USCs. We're not getting those kind of guys. And so, you know, we worry when we go up against those things, but our guys usually hold their own. So, you know, hats off to Coach Bielema. And like I said, it was really interesting to hear him talk about that.
Well, you know, we're going to try and carry that thread going through. We're going to try and get some more coaches on to talk about that because, Game Changer, I think you hit right the point. I mean, getting into the psychology of a program in terms of how they approach players, I think is very critical. It helps coach the fans and folks to understand that there's many different ways to build a national champion and or a competitive team that can be there every year. And to understand that, I think, is very important. Your analysis was right on point. I know we got the PhD back in the game. Phil, you had a chance to do it. I know you've been working a lot with setting this up with Coach Bielema. I'd love to get your reaction before we send it back to the game changer.
That was an excellent interview. And like Marcus, it was really helpful to hear some of the philosophies of the program, which helps explain, A, why they've been so successful, and B, you know, why they have produced so many players that fit in NFL type of systems. And one of the things he mentioned was that they're right up there, if not the top, in terms of producing NFL players, you know, that are successful in the league and make it into the league. And I think it comes back to a focus on character and finding guys who fit certain niches, who do certain things good. So it was really impressive to hear that. First-class guy, Coach Bielema. I've had a chance to interact with him throughout this process. So, again, it was just outstanding to hear thoughts in terms of the program, Russell Wilson, and the direction they're taking to move forward.
All right. Game changers.
So we're going to transition real quick. Again, hats off to Coach Bielema for joining us. That was a big get for us. I just need to give the fellas a real quick pat on the back for pulling that off and getting that together. Yeah, clap for yourselves, fellas. Pat yourselves on the back. That was excellent. That was excellent. Devon, way to carry that interview. Appreciate it. All right. Now, from going from Wisconsin football to Wisconsin basketball, we're going to transition into our Bracket Buster NCAA Primer section of the show. We have quite a few interviews lined up from head coaches of tournament teams in the NCAA tourney. To start out, we're going to get into kind of, we're going to play an interview for you that we did earlier in the week with Coach Bill Evans, assistant coach of the Montana Grizzlies, which will be taking on the Wisconsin Badgers basketball program. All right? So we're going to get into that real quick. We're going to get that queued up. We're going to let you listen to it, and then we're going to break it down and give you our opinion on whether or not the Montana Grizzlies and the other teams that we profiled tonight and the other coaches that we talked to, if their teams are bracket busters. All right, so get your brackets out. We're going to give you the RSG lowdown on whether or not these teams are bracket busters. We've combed through the data. We've done all the metrics. You know, we've got our Billy Bean on. We've been holding it down the last week, crunching numbers on all of these teams. And we're going to give you the lowdown on what their chances really are of being bracket busters. So let me fill up the
You're on with the Real Sports Guys in our remote studio. This is our pre-tournament special. We are going to talk to assistant coach Bill Evans with the Montana Grizzlies. They're preparing to play the Wisconsin Badgers. Hey, coach, welcome to the Real Sports Guys.
Oh, thanks very much for having me. I'm looking forward to chatting with you guys.
Coach, you talked about the importance of securing home court for the conference championship, the Big Sky championship, and the importance of doing that. You have an incredible home court advantage when you think about the fans that you have at Dogberg Arena, and they've been described as being delirious. For folks who are not familiar with your team, can you talk a little bit about your team and the tempo and the style as you prepare for the Badgers?
Well, we have a very rabid fan base here in Missoula. Basketball and football and athletics in general are very, very important to the people of Montana. And when we played Weber in the championship game, was a sellout. We had over 7,000 people here. And then we followed that with about 6,500. And then for the championship game of our conference tournament, we played Weber again. And it was standing room only. And so the people here really support athletics, and you know, they have some great tradition, and consequently fans are really into it. You know, they kind of do things on key because they're very, very supportive of what we're doing. So it was a very, very good atmosphere here, and very, very exciting.
When you know, for folks who are not familiar with your team, and you talked about Will Cherry and Kareem Jamar, can you talk a little bit about style of play and some of the players that folks need to keep an eye on as you prepare for the Badgers?
Sure. You know, we're a team that runs in transition when we get a chance. I would say we're a we're a fast break team, but certainly when there's opportunities there, we'll push the ball up the floor. I think you'd best characterize us as being a half court team that has multiple weapons. We have five guys on the floor all the time that are pretty good offensively. Four of them are, I think, I would say, are good shooters, and Art Stewart, who is one of our best defenders and most versatile players, is certainly an adequate shooter, but doesn't look to do that much. So, offensively, I think the people that we play with, can really stretch defenses. Our four and five are both good three-point shooters, and then of course Will and Kareem are probably the hub of our team. Offensively, and Will, I think, is one of the best defenders in the country at his position, and I mean that. He's a tremendous defender. Defensively, we play multiple defenses, going back and forth between man and zone, and I think we're pretty good at both. I think Coach does a good job of preparing us to play both defenses. So I think we're a capable defensive team at both ends, or in both defenses, excuse me. Our field goal percentage defense in league is at 37.7, so I think that's really, really that's a very good defensive field goal percentage. We work real hard to make guys shoot the ball inside the arc and then not allow layups. Those two things. And I know Wisconsin's a tremendous 3-point shooting team, and they obviously are a very, very good team.
Coach, in the Big Sky Championship game, you only played seven players, but your starters logged heavy minutes, most of them over 34 minutes in the game, but they had only three fouls. No one went more than three fouls. Can you talk a little bit about how that might affect you as you prepare for the Badgers?
You know, we have we play six or seven guys. That's what Coach has done. And in these tournaments, there's so many long timeouts. And so many of them that I believe you can shorten your bench a little bit. And Coach has been doing that the past three or four games. He has shortened the bench, and our guys are used to playing in long spurts. I think one of Coach's strengths is he understands how to rest guys. He does a good job of resting them in practices. Our practices have been shortened, and we do a lot of stuff in the half court. So I think would we like to play more guys? Certainly. But I think that what we've been doing has been working for us, and with the long timeouts and so many of them, I think we can get them enough rest. Now, I know that Wisconsin is a very, very physical team, but they play a little slower. And I say that with tremendous respect. They don't play as fast as some teams. And so I think I'm not sure fatigue will be a factor. I think, again, Wisconsin is very, very physical, and they take a lot of time on the clock. So we're going to have to guard for long periods of time. So that could be a factor.
Well, I think the other thing that it would be important for us to talk about a little bit is that, you just accepted the head coaching position at Idaho State, I believe.
Yes.
And so you're in some ways managing kind of two worlds as you transition.
Right.
How's this been for you? First of all, congratulations. But
how's
this been for you kind of managing this, and what do you hope to do as you move to Idaho State?
Well, I appreciate you mentioning that. I'm kind of wearing two hats a little bit. One of our assistants, Freddie Owens, played at Wisconsin, and so he has a pretty good feel for the program. But, Coach has allowed me to, again, kind of wear two hats a little bit. So I've been doing what I can to help us prepare for that, and then doing some things that I need to do to help me be successful at Idaho State. I'm going to recruit much like we've recruited here, and much like I recruited in Southern Utah. I think, integrity and work ethic and toughness and all those kind of things are extremely important to me. And I'm going to recruit guys that possess those characteristics or those qualities. And I think those things have to be recruited. And I just don't think you just look at a player and you take him regardless of how he plays or what he does off the floor or type of student he is or the type of integrity or toughness he has. I think you need to recruit those things. And so that'll be things, or those will be things that I'll certainly look for in players that I want to be around at Idaho State. And you know, they've had some great tradition. It's been a while, but they do have some tradition there. And you know, I feel very, very fortunate a lot of times when a guy's been in a school like I've been at Southern Utah, and you know, lost my job, you know, there, you know, sometimes it's pretty difficult to get a second chance from a place like Southern Utah, and so I feel very, very fortunate that I've been given a chance. And, you know, I tell Coach Tinkle all the time, our head coach, you know, I'm a lot smarter as an assistant than I was as a head coach, and all of a sudden I got another head job and I become stupid again. Because I got plenty of answers for him when he's standing up, walking up and down, but when I have to do it, I'm not as smart. But you know, I think this game, what a great game it is, but sometimes we make it too difficult. So I'm gonna recruit guys that really play for the right reasons, that play the right way, that possess tremendous toughness and want to get better. And those are the kind of guys I'm going to recruit, and those are the kind of guys that I'm going to win with. So I'm looking forward to that opportunity.
Congratulations, Coach. You're listening to Real Sports Guys. We're on with assistant Coach Bill Evans, who's with Montana Grizzlies and the new newly hired head coach at Idaho State. Coach, on the Real Sports Guys, we just recently completed a ranking for the top 50 NBA players of all time. And our crew split on Jordan and Chamberlain. Can you talk a little bit about who do you think is the number one player of all time in NBA history?
You know, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, I remember Wilt toward the end of his career as a player, and certainly, you know, I've watched you know Michael Jordan as well. I think it's very, very difficult because they're both such dominating guys. I mean, you know Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points in a game, and I mean, for him to get over 20 rebounds was almost something of a norm. You know, could change the game inside, and certainly a tremendous player. But I think it's very, very difficult not to to look at Michael Jordan and say, you know, I think he would be my pick. I certainly think that part of that would be because of the number of championships that he won. And I always tell guys, you know, in a league, there's a most valuable player, and then there's a most outstanding player. And I would think, just thinking rather quickly about it, that maybe you know, a guy like you know, Michael Jordan might be the most valuable player who's ever played, and maybe Will could be the most outstanding player. But I would, if I were going to start a team, I would probably go with Michael Jordan.
Well, Coach, I'm glad, you know, I went with Jordan, so it sounds like great minds think alike. You're listening to the Real Sports Guys. I'm here with assistant Coach Bill Evans for Montana Grizzlies, preparing to play the Wisconsin Badgers. And Coach, we want to thank you for being on the show with us, and good luck against Wisconsin. And also, we want to wish you well with your new position at Idaho State, and I hope we'll have you on with us again in the near future.
Good. You call me anytime, and I'm always happy to chat with you guys, and good luck, and thanks for the time.
All right. That's assistant Coach Bill Evans with Montana Grizzlies and the new head coach of the Idaho State University. You're on with the Real Sports Guys. This is our pre-NCAA draft conversation.
All right. Excellent interview, D-Wills. Way to hold it down again, man. You're getting really good at this, man.
I'm trying to get my Roy Firestone on. I'm trying to get my
Roy
Firestone.
You're trying to be a young Brian Gumbel over there, man.
Brian Gumbel, you know. Moment with Bryant. A moment with Bryant.
You're James Bryant. You're Jimmy B over there, man. I like you.
I like it. So
that's the quality of a liberal arts education.
That's what I'm talking about. Pump it up, BC all the way, baby. All right. So Montana versus Wisconsin, the 13th seed versus a 4 seed. Now, a lot of the national pundits have picked this game as a upset special. And, you know, I was assigned to kind of really break down Montana and really dig in true game changer fashion into what they do and how they get what they get done. You know, right now Montana is riding a 14-game win streak. And what the significance of that, because you hear a lot of pundits talk about that 14-game win streak, and what the significance of that means is not only are they hot, but usually when a team gets that hot and is playing that well for that extended period of a time, that means all of the players have fit in. Everybody's playing their role. Everybody's comfortable with what they're doing. They're comfortable with their minutes. They know who needs to get shots when. Chemistry is just clicking right now for this team, which is which makes them very dangerous when you come into the tournament. When guys are really relaxed, they know who's doing what. They know when shots are coming. They know when they're going to get their looks. They know how many looks they can expect to get. And they trust each other. They trust each other to get the ball where it needs to get to so they can win games, which is, again, a key, because when it gets close at the end of the game, they're not going to fold. They have a fairly veteran team. They're not very deep. They only play about five to six guys. In the conference championship game in the second half, they didn't have but one. They didn't have any subs in the second half of the conference championship game, not a sub. So that's something that we're going to get into a little bit more. The main keys and strengths of this team is that they get out and contest shooting. They hold their opponents to 40% shooting on the season. They get out and pressure on the ball. Will Cherry is a ball hawk. He averaged 2.6 steals a game. He's their leading scorer, averaging 16 points a game. As a team, they shoot it really well from the field. They shoot it really well from the three. They're a really versatile team. A lot of guys, they don't have a ton of size. They're really quick. They have a lot of quickness between Cherry and Jamar. They do have a seven-footer. He plays about 30 minutes a night. He's solid. He's not exceptional, but he's solid. He also shoots the three. He shot 85 threes this season, made 43% of them. So they're going to really stretch teams out with their size and their length. Or with their lack of size and length, they kind of counter that by stretching teams out and forcing other teams' bigs to have to really play all the way out to the three-point line and really play the full half court. Coach Evans mentioned one thing that I thought was a real sneaky key to this game. He kind of slipped it in there, but they have an assistant coach who used to play under Bo Ryan. And one of the advantages that the Badgers often have on teams is that no one else in the country runs a swing. And because no one else in the country runs a swing, it's very difficult for even veteran players to adjust to it for a one-game situation. When it's their first time really seeing it, they don't really know the nuances of it, they don't really understand all of the reads and the things that the players on the Badgers are looking at and how the Badgers are going to respond to the things that they do as defenders. Having an assistant coach who's played in the system is a huge advantage for Montana. It is an immeasurable advantage because he can help his players get into the minds of Jordan Taylor, Jason Gossett, you know, Jordan Bergeron. He can help them get into the minds and see what they're being taught to see. He can help the Montana guys understand when the ball's at the wing and the back screen's coming and they're interchanging, this is what they're looking for. They're looking for you to do this. If you do this, they're going to do this. And then if you do this, they're going to do this. To really help their players understand the true nuances of the system is going to be a huge advantage for Montana. So, ultimately, how do I see this game playing out? I see it being a close game. This game is going to come down to the wire. Again, the main question we're trying to answer is Montana bracket busted? This game is definitely going to come down to the wire. All right? The key thing, though, the Badgers, with Montana's ability to get out on shooters, the Badgers are probably not going to hit a bunch of shots. The Badgers have been cold lately. They haven't been real consistent with their shooting. They live and die by the jumper. I expect them to shoot poorly in this game because of the way Montana defends on the perimeter.
But I also expect Montana to not shoot as well as they usually do, because the Badgers also do an excellent job of playing perimeter defense and really getting out on shooters. The key to this is who's going to win the rebounding battle, because there are going to be a ton of missed shots. There are going to be a ton of missed shots. So being able to control the boards and not give up a ton of offensive rebounds is going to decide this game. Because of that, I'm choosing the Wisconsin Badgers, and I'm saying no, Montana is not a bracket buster. The reason being is they only going five deep, and the Badgers are a Big Ten team, a Big Ten physical, and to only go five deep, and the guys that they're bringing in off the bench are not big. They're not bringing in bigs off the bench consistently. So to only go five deep, and the guys you're bringing in aren't big, their top two subs off the bench are not big players, they're perimeter players. That is really going to affect their ability to control the glass, which I think is what's going to determine who wins this game. Because it's going to be about second and third opportunities on possessions. You know, when you go down court, you get one trip down the court, it's going to be about those second and third opportunities. And Coach Evans also talked about how long the Badgers make you play a possession. And that's going to wear down their starters, having to play defense and having to guard the swing for 30 seconds out of 35 each possession. It's really going to wear their players down. So I think ultimately it's going to be a battle of attrition. It's going to be a really close game. It's going to be a tight game. Montana could pull it out. But my breakdown says Montana will not pull this game out of Wisconsin. We'll eke it out. It'll be a 2-3 point game, but it'll be one on the glass.
And I'll just quick add it before we transition into the next interview that you're right. And I think the one thing that Montana has is that I think they have a little bit more explosive scoring than Wisconsin. And I think that might give them the one shot that they do have. But, you know, one thing about the tournament, when you rely on threes, they don't go down as easy in the first round. And if you give Bo Ryan a week to prepare, this would be a better game for Montana if it was a turnaround game on the weekend. But with a week to prepare, you know, Wisconsin's going to be ready for them.
Yeah. So we're going to get into our next coaching interview. We have UNC Asheville, who will be playing Syracuse in round one, who just lost their starting center, Fab Mello, was just ruled ineligible, breaking news. So we're going to listen to head coach Eddie Bidenbach talk about his UNC Asheville Bulldogs.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys on realsportsguys.com. We have Coach Eddie Bidenbach, the head coach of UNC Asheville. He's headed to the NCAA tournament for the second straight year. He's chatting with the Real Sports Guys in the studio. Coach, your conference championship game was on March 3rd. So that leaves your team with 10, 12, 13, 14 days of a layoff before your first NCAA tournament game. How does that benefit or hinder your team?
Well, I would rather play a game in there, but we're rather defended with about 6 or 7 days. But like I said, we had a couple guys that have some nagging injuries. We gave them a couple of days off, and then we came back and just practiced lightly, got a lot of shots up, and went over our offenses and our different defenses without scrimmage, and then we had a real, like, inter-squad game today. We'll work hard, and we'll get back to our academics a little bit, and we'll work hard and get some shots up and things. But it's fun to watch the other teams and have your name up as one of the first guys that's in the tournament. but there's nothing we can do about laying off. Coaches always have arguments about what is better, rest or rust. And I would rather be playing, but I wouldn't want to play just some insignificant games. We're ready for the NCAA tournament, and we'll be happy on Sunday night to see how the selection goes. Whether we play a play-in game on Tuesday or we go straight to the NCAA tournament and get a little better seed than that and play on Thursday or Friday, really doesn't matter to me. We want to play. We think we're very fortunate to be in the tournament. I've said this before. I don't think we're one of the top 68 teams in the country. I love the way the NCAA tournament is set up with conference champions, either from the tournament or regular season, being able to go. We're ranked, I think, 102 in the RPI. But some other teams, I don't want to mention anybody else, but lesser teams in some of the other leagues, for example, I'm not picking on these guys because these guys are good too, an Arizona State or a Clemson, should they not be fortunate enough, very good teams, but if they don't win their tournament, they don't get to go. But they've had the whole season worth of shots against the Dukes and the Carolinas and people like that. So I think it really keeps every team in the country on the edge of their seats, keeps them ready, keeps them saying, hey, we have another chance come tournament time. That way all the seniors in the country who have worked for 4 years really have a chance up until their last game. And everybody plays hard thinking, hey, at least, boy, we keep getting better during the season. Come tournament time, we'll have a chance to get to the NCAA. It just makes a really great competitive season for every team in the NCAA. And I think it's great the way it goes, the way they do it.
We're on with you're on with the Real Sports Guys on realsportsguys.com. We're chatting with Coach Eddie Weidenbach, the head coach of UNC Asheville, who again has punched their ticket to the big dance. Okay. So, Coach, you're located right there in Carolina, North Carolina, which is one of the richest hotbeds of basketball in the country. You got Wake Forest there, you got the Tar Heels, NC State, Duke. Talk about how the success of teams from smaller conferences over the last few years in NCAA tournaments, such as Davidson, ECU, James Mason, Northern Iowa. Talk about how that's helped you recruiting in the state of Carolina.
Well, I think that high school players, begin to realize watching these teams that you can have a great career and not be at one of the power schools. And it's really important for them to want to play right away as freshmen and sophomores. Most of these kids could all play at the bigger schools, but they might not play until they're a junior or a senior. And in some cases, when they recruit these guys that are one and done, they may not get in the game as a regular player anytime. So I think they're beginning to realize, watching, that you can be successful and have a wonderful career at some of these smaller schools because they're going to get to play regularly as freshmen. And that makes our guys a little bit more successful because they're really not high draft picks in the NBA, and they play all the way through to their senior year. Now, in Davidson's case, of course, they lost Curry to hardship. When you have great, great players like guys like that, you're going to lose them anyway. But I think that the majority of guys are going to try to play through their senior year, and it really is a lot of fun in a lot of the other schools and a lot of other leagues. The basketball is a lot better than people understand.
Along with the Real Sports Guys, we have Coach Eddie Weidenbach, head coach of UNC Asheville, who's headed to the NCAA tournament in our studio. Now, Coach, before we let you go, I want to ask you about a discussion that the host of the Real Sports Guys, we've been going back and forth over the last 2 weeks. You came up with a top 50 list for the greatest NBA players of all time. A few of us had Wilt Chamberlain as a top player, but most of the hosts had Michael Jordan as a top player of all time. Who would you pick, Jordan or Chamberlain?
Well, I really am not sure who I would pick, and whoever did that, picks in that, I think it's a lot easier to pick the top 10 or the top 20 than picking the top 1 or 2. First of all, if anybody's ever asked me that question, what I like to do is say, okay, I'd like to go with little guys, and then big guys, little guys being, 6'9", 6'8", 6'7", smaller than that, and big guys being the guys like Chamberlain. And I think I would, if I was ever in a situation, I'd go that way, and I'd go with guys like Jabbar, Chamberlain, Bill Russell, you know, all the great big men that have played the game. When you get up to the smaller guys, the NCAA voted a few years ago, I think at the turn of the century, the best player ever to play to play the game, big or little. And they picked off Oscar Robertson, who averaged a triple-double when he was playing in the pros. And so I think Michael Jordan is the greatest. I think he, by winning championships, his competitive drive, a lot like they mentioned, Kobe Bryant is so competitive. But Jordan won championships. He knew how to play. He knew how to win. When you get to the college game, right here in our hometown, you know, I always liked David Thompson better than Jordan because as a college player, but David didn't have the success that Michael had in the pros. But I think Jordan is a good pick. I think Oscar Robertson is a good pick. There's so many great ones that I really can't say. Chamberlain, I happened to play with for long enough for a cup of coffee with Los Angeles, and he was just phenomenal. He could do everything that he could do. The night he scored 100 points, he made most of his free throws. I used to shoot free throws with him before practice started. And like Shaquille O'Neal, he was self-conscious, but in practice, before people showed up, he could make free throws. But all of those guys had different things that, you know, we could all either pick on or say, hey, this guy was so powerful during his time that, you know, he averaged 50 points a game. He averaged X number of assists when they said he couldn't do that. I mean, all those guys were just great. So I'd really rather not pick a perfect or the best player. I'd be in more of a situation to pick the top 25 or the top 10 or something like that.
Well, Coach, thank you so much for making time for us. We know how busy it can be with media requests during this week before the tournament. We will have a special eye on your team. We think you guys can do really well in the tournament. And again, we want to wish you the best of luck, and thank you so much for coming on to the show with us.
Great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
For RSG Radio, this is Phil T. I'm sending it back to Marcus the Game Changer back in the studio. All right, we're back in the studio. Again, you're listening to Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio. That was UNC Asheville head coach Eddie Bidenbach talking a little bit about his team. And again, the main question that we're asking right now is this team a bracket buster? And I'm going to have to lay the verdict down and say initial analysis says no. Good team. They're playing Syracuse, which is a really tough team. Even without Fab Melo, I don't think UNC Asheville stands much of a chance. They like to play at a fast pace. They score in the low 80s. They shoot the ball really well from the field, about 48% on the season, 36% from the three, 76% from the line. They really attack the basket pretty well as well. They shot 200 more free throws than most of their opponents. They have five players who score in double figures. Their main players are J.P. Prim. He's the main guard that makes the team go. He's shot in close to 200 three-pointers this season, which is an advantage against the zone. They're going to put up a lot of shots. Their best chance to win this game is really by pushing the pace and trying to get action going early before Syracuse can settle into their zone. But, again, I think this is another battle of attrition. Early on, it's going to seem like this is going to go down to the wire, but I think at the end of the day, Syracuse has too many good players, too many high-level players for Asheville to keep up, and I think as the game progresses, the lead is going to continue to grow and grow, and it's probably going to end up a 20-25-point game. But again, it's not due to any ineptitude in Asheville's players. It's just they don't have enough high-caliber players to compete with the Syracuse. So, no, they are not a bracket buster. Keep Syracuse on your line.
Not so fast, my friend. I like UNC Asheville. I think they're a good team. You know, talking to Coach Bidenbach, you know, Division I basketball coaches, they can sell water to a sailor. You know, I mean, they are great sales folks. And, you know, the time I had to spend with Coach, you know, he just really sold me on what some of the positives are with his team. And I know everybody out there listening is wondering if I'm on medication right now. This is a 1 seed versus a 16 seed. It's never happened. But honestly, you know, I think there's a couple things that's working towards their benefit. You know, he talked about what's better, rest versus rust. They're going to have about 2 weeks off before their first game. I think without Fab Melo, I think this is a borderline tournament team. Without Fab Melo, who is the defensive player of the league in the Big East Conference, they are an average borderline NCAA team. And while Syracuse has some depth, what concerns me with them is with that 2-3 zone, they get to be very exposed with shooters. Game Changer, you brought up a really good point on how they get to the rack. UNC Asheville gets to the rack a lot. They share the ball very well. In their championship game, they had 29 field goals, which came from 24 assists, which was a conference championship record. So I think the way that they share the ball, they have four guys that have been playing together for at least 3 years in the starting lineup. I like UNC Asheville. I filled out two brackets. I put Syracuse on one, and I put UNC Asheville on the other. So I'm kind of tiptoeing, but at the same time, I'm stepping on out there in faith. So before I let the Game Changer bring out his pit bull cocaine in the corner to rip me up, I'm going to transition to University of Detroit. We had a chance to sit down with the head coach, Ray McCollum. But before we get to that interview, we're going to talk about Doug Anderson. He's a junior forward from University of Detroit. He's a starting forward. I'm from Kalamazoo, Michigan. A lot of folks out there listening know that. This kid came from my alma mater, Kalamazoo Central. He had an all-state career there. Then he moved to JUCO, one of the top ones in the country, Mott Community College. And he reached All-American level there as well. So this is his first year in D1. And he's putting up about 9.5 points a game, 6 rebounds. But this kid is probably one of the most explosive athletes I've ever seen play basketball. Okay, you talk about Vince Carter type of athleticism, this kid has it. Okay, and he is starting to develop his game, you know, seeing what he was in high school to the point of where he is now. You know, he's shooting the ball a lot better. He shot 80% from the line. Last year in JUCO, he shot 40% from three. He's about 6'5", 6'6", and he can jump out the gym. I promise you that there will be at least one shining moment type of dunk that you will see. You know, right after they cut off the net, they play one shining moment and they show all the clips, there will be at least one from this kid. This is how explosive he is. So we got a quick five-minute audio clip here. Doug Anderson, forward from University of Detroit.
Welcome to the Real Sports Guys studio, where I'm here with Doug Anderson, the starting forward YouTube sensation for the University of Detroit Mercy basketball team that just recently won the Horizon League Championship over Valparaiso and is headed to the Big Dance. How you doing today, Doug?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
Pretty good. Doug, first of all, congratulations for winning the conference championship. While watching the game on ESPN earlier this week, I couldn't help but just see the energy. Everybody on the bench, everybody on the court, you know, during the comeback in the second half. You know, I was just so impressed with the energy. Tell me what that was like going through that process.
I mean, it was good. I mean, everybody came into the game playing for a reason to win. And, like, we worked hard for that point. Like, we felt like we shouldn't have lost to this team prior, both times we played them. So we just all went out with something to play for, played hard. Just basically did what we had to do to come out with the win.
I'm pretty familiar with some of your feats, you know, while you were at Kalamazoo Central, as well as the stuff that's on YouTube. Just last year, or maybe it was the year before, I saw you in the top 10 plays for shattering the backboard. What was that experience like?
It was kind of crazy at first. Like, I took it as it wasn't really a big deal at first, but to everybody around me, it was. So then I tried to, like, I mean, it was just seeing myself on ESPN after so many years and just seeing other people, it was just, like, it was amazing, like, a great feeling on the inside. Like, I did something that some of my favorite players have did.
Who are some of your favorite players?
J.R. Smith, like, of course, Jordan, he was always on ESPN, top 10. LeBron, for the big guys, Monte Ellis, like, just people who got all around game and then out of nowhere just come and just dunk on you.
So speaking about all around games, I've been impressed with how you've improved, become more of a well-rounded ball player since you left Kalamazoo Central. Talk about some of the things you've done to get to this point, and what are some of the things you need to do to keep developing as a basketball player?
Going to gym, and I get my shots up. And always have to develop my jump shot. I mean, then when I have a long time, like, I work on my handling. I mean, and it all shows, like I'll kind of practice and use it in practice, work on it in practice. I mean, and it, like, every time I play, like, it just shows that it's getting better and better. Like, yeah, I mean, I just really have to develop your game to another level, at a D1 level, because everybody is a good player. So,
Doug, over the last couple of years, you know, you left Kalamazoo Central as an All-Stater, then you went to Mott. The junior college in Flint, accomplished All-American status there, and now you're headed to the big dance at U of D. Talk about this process and reflect a little bit of how this journey has been for you.
Mine's been a great journey. I mean, Central, we started off as a slow team, like we were losing, then we ended up winning games. Mott, we were winning games here. We started off slow, but we picked up towards the end. I mean, like, all these teams, we always have players that's willing to do whatever to come out and get a win. Like, teamwork, we talk to each other. I mean, like, every level, I've always had a group of players who can just talk to you and just talk, just get you through every situation. I mean, and me, like, they, like, you don't always have to use your dunk, like, dunking to get us energized, like, you get a block shot, I mean, a steal, I mean, just, like, the offensive rebounds, like, it's been an amazing journey, like, to come so far, and just so many different people that I've met on my way here that have helped me develop my game to prove that I was ready to play at the Division I level.
The Real Sports Guys on RealSportsGuys.com. I'm here with Doug Anderson, the starting forward for University of Detroit Mercy basketball team that's headed to the big dance. Doug, talk to me a little bit about how the preparation for the tournament is going.
Right now, we just came in, like, today, practice, work on our plays. And, I mean, basically get shots up. I mean, you have to stay ready. Prepare. Like, you don't know who you're going to play. And basically, like, or where we're going to play, but what we can't control is how we come out and play. So we've just been getting our stuff together, like, perfecting what we know we can do. And so we find out who we play, definitely get ready for them.
Well, Doug, thanks a lot for coming on. Again, this is Doug Anderson from University of Detroit Mercy. Check him out throughout the tournament. Doug, thanks for making time, and good luck in the tournament.
Thanks.
All right, I'm going to send it back to the studio tomorrow.
So you're listening to The Real Sports Guys at RealSportsGuys.com. That was a clip from Doug Anderson, junior power forward for University of Detroit Mercy, who just recently won the Horizon League Championship in a 20-point win over Valpo. Again, check out Doug on YouTube. Just plug in Doug Anderson, Detroit. You'll be in front of the computer for about an hour looking at this young man's feats. One of the things I want to mention is he has really developed in terms of a defensive player, where Coach McCollum even mentioned that he's becoming one of their best perimeter lockdown defenders. So number 23 for UD Mercy Titans, Doug Anderson, keep a lookout for him. So moving forward, we're going to talk about U of D's program. Again, they just won the Horizon League Championship. We had a chance to sit down with Ray McCollum, the head coach for University of Detroit. We've got a brief clip here. When we come back, we're going to break down their team and their first-round matchup against Kansas.
Welcome to the Real Sports Guys pre-tourney show. I'm here with head coach of University of Detroit Mercy, Ray McCollum Sr. They just currently won the Horizon Championship over Valpo a couple of days ago. Coach, congratulations with the win.
Thank you very much. It's an exciting time at University of Detroit.
Now, Coach, most of the country is aware of your son, who was in the McDonald's All-American. but you all have a pretty balanced roster of players who have made some pretty major contributions to your team's success. Players like Chase, Eli, LaMarcus, and Doug Anderson come to mind. Can you talk a little bit about the makeup of your team and how this balance has helped you all out?
Well, you said it. We have balance. Ray has the name, being a McDonald's All-American with a high exposure, and then being in state, winning the state championship, and then being my son. But I think we have an exciting team, a very athletic team that can play several different styles. We led the Rising League in scoring this year. We've got Chase Simon, who's a co-captain with Ray, who was a preseason all-conference selection. Eli Holman was a preseason all-conference selection. You know, Doug was a candidate for newcomer of the year. Jason Calise is one of the top 3-point shooters in the conference. We have six guys that have scored 20 or more points. That shows you about the balance. And if you look at our box scores, time and time again, it's not unusual for us to have four or five guys in double figures.
Coach, what's one key stat that serves as a litmus test for your team's success?
I thought that in our championship game, we really locked in with our second half defense. We have the ability to block shots. We can go with a big lineup or we can go small. We go big, we can put Eli Holman at 6'9", 260 out there on the court with LaMarcus Lowe at 6'10". So you've got a 4 and 5 with great size. And then as you saw in the in the Valpo Razo championship game, we played Chase some at the 4, which he's about 6'7", about 215. So
right.
We can go small, and that brings Donovan Foster in and gives us some more speed and quickness and a lot of firepower. So we have the ability to play big, we can play small, and we really like to play fast.
Now, Coach, you mentioned Doug Anderson was one of the finalists for newcomer of the year for the conference. I'm originally from Kalamazoo, Michigan, from Kalamazoo Central. I've followed Doug's career over the last 4 or 5 years, and I've noticed that his game is starting to round out. Can you share with our listeners what you've stressed in terms of helping Doug reach his full potential as a basketball player?
Well, I remember seeing Doug at Kalamazoo Central right before his senior year, and actually came in to Detroit and played Detroit Country Day against Ray's team, which was, I mean, if not one or number two in the state. And Doug had 6 dunks in that game. I mean, and every one of them was spectacular. I'm sure you heard about it. I mean, he's just
absolutely
a phenomenal, phenomenal athlete. And he's actually been probably ESPN top 10 in plays of the night 2 or 3 times. So he's a highlight waiting to happen. But what Doug has really done is first of all, he has a great attitude. And I'd say if you have a great attitude, that gives you a chance to be successful. He's been very coachable. He's worked hard. He's really worked on his shot. We've asked him to do other things, be able to guard on the perimeter as well as battle on the inside. We challenged him to become a better rebounder and to continue to work on his ball skills and passing. And he's had games where he's had 5 assists. He's had games where he's blocked 2 or 3 shots. He's had games where he's, scored, 20 points and kind of done everything we've asked him to do. So he's been a real key with this team. What role he was going to play, I didn't know. We were going to have Nick Minerath, who was our returning foreman, who was a starter last year. And from day one, Doug said, hey, whatever you need me to do, Coach.
Now, Coach, the success Butler's had over the last couple of years has really given mid-majors in general, but specifically the Horizon League, some very positive exposure. Can you talk about how that's helped recruiting for your program, as you have done an outstanding job stacking your team with some really top talent?
You know what? Butler is our flagship program. And what they've accomplished, being runner-up 2 consecutive years, tells you Brad Stevens is one of the best coaches in the country, and they have one of the top programs in the country. And we've used that when you talk about identifying what conference are you in. And that's the first thing that we mentioned, that, hey, we're in the conference in the Rising League with Butler University. Everyone can relate to Butler University. And and we get their attention with that. So, and I think that's one of the things that we've said to all our guys, you get to play against Butler. And it's a big deal.
Now, Coach, watching the game on ESPN earlier this week, I saw you dancing after the championship game, and all the players and your son, they were falling out in laughter. Even though you look good doing it, I'll give you your credit. So to everybody, you know, watching from the outside, you know, it really appears that you and your son are enjoying this ride together. Can you talk about what this has meant for you as a father to kind of share this journey with your son?
Well, it's an incredible experience. I think, first of all, I missed a lot of his games during in high school time because I was out recruiting and had to coach my college team. But, you know, when he made the decision to join us, seeing him every day, he came here to win a championship and to help lead us to the NCAA tournament. And that's what you saw. I mean, that's the first thing he said. We did it. We did it. This is where it's supposed to be. This is what we came here to do. And just a special, special time and a special moment. And, you know, it's an experience and a feeling that I won't forget.
Now, Coach, before we let you go, the co-host of The Real Sports Guys, over the last couple of weeks, we put together a list of our top 50 players of all time, basketball players. And a couple of the hosts selected Michael Jordan as number one on that list. And another host, which was me, selected Will Chamberlain top on that list. Who do you feel is the best basketball player of all time?
I've got to go with Michael Jordan. I mean, the way he did it, I mean, first of all, he's the ultimate competitor. He's truly a winner, and he did what his team needed him to do. And he's only 6'6". I mean, if it's grab 15 rebounds, if it's score 50 points, if it's block shots, if it's guard the best player, he got it done. And he led by verbal, and he led by example. I watched him very, very close. He's my guy.
So we've been chatting here with Ray McCollum, the head coach of University of Detroit Mercy, who's headed to the big dance. Coach, we want to thank you for taking some time out during this busy time to talk with us. I want to let you know that most of the Kalamazoo is behind you, even though our show is a national show. We've been following you extra close, have the DVR set up every time you guys play. So again, Coach, we wish you the best of luck throughout the tournament.
All right. Thank you very much.
We're going to send it back to the studio to Marcus. So that was our interview with Ray McCollum, the head coach of the Detroit Titans, who have Baylor in the – no, I'm sorry, they have Kansas in the first round. So let's break down. And, again, thanks for Coach McCollum for coming on with us. A special shout-out to Mitch, the Sports Information Director at UAD, for making this happening. But let's break down the UAD Titans here. Because I have a statement that is certainly...
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It's
getting the people going.
So I have some very, very provocative statements that we're going to touch on now, but I'm sure in the after show, in the after hours, which will start a half an hour from now, Marcus will have quite a bit of comments for me. But I'll just start out with my most provocative statement. I see UAD making the Final Four. I'll say it twice for everybody out there that just jerked their head. I see UAD making it to the Final Four. And I say this for a couple of reasons. First of all, obviously, I see them beating Kansas in the first round. And I'll touch on that shortly. But I see UNC losing to Creighton also in the first round. So you'll have the top two seeds out of that region gone. And then from that point, I think it's up for grabs. First of all, UAD does not look like the classic 15 seed. Now, throughout the history of the tournament, there's only been four teams that were 15 seeds that won their opening game. That was Hampton in 2001, Coppin State in 97, Santa Clara in 93, and Richmond in 91 when they beat the Syracuse Orangemen.
UAD is very athletic. They can go big. They can go small, which Coach McCollum kind of talked about. They have two guys who I could see easily playing professional basketball, perhaps even in the NBA, and Eli Holman and LaMarcus Lowe. Both these guys are 6'9", 6'10". Marcus Lowe led the league, was amongst the leaguers in over two blocks a game. Eli Holman's coming off the bench this year, but this is a kid that averaged 15 and 10 last year. Now, their best player, in my opinion, is Ray McCollum, the coach's son. McCollum was an All-American coming out of high school. He had the choice to play anywhere in the country, but he stayed home. And I think this tournament, we're going to have an opportunity to really see him do his thing on the national stage. With the big guys, I think they're going to lock it down low. They have enough depth down there that they can be aggressive and not worry about foul trouble. And then on the perimeter, I like a kid that you may not know the name now, but you're going to know it after the tournament, a kid by the name of Chase Simon. He's about 6'7", 6'8". He goes about 220. Coach talked about him a little bit. This guy gives this team a lot of flexibility. Naturally, he plays the two or three. He can shoot the ball from the outside. He's putting on the deck much, much better. Excellent defender. But when they want to go small, they can play this kid at 6'7", and he can hold his own down low. When they do that, they move McCollum over to the two. Jason Kless, who led the league in three-point shooting at about 10 points a game, they move him down to the three. He's about 6'2". Then they bring off a kid off the bench that's about 5'10 to run the point. And this makes this team really tough to guard. So, again, I think that they can beat Kansas in the first round. We'll get into that a little bit more in the after hour. But that's my take on UAD. And, obviously, I wish the UAD Titans all the best in the tournament. Thank you, Dan, for Coach McCollum for chatting with us. Moving forward in our preview show, and, again, we still have four or five teams to get to. We're going to move over to the South Dakota State. They're making their first appearance in the tournament. They were just moved over from Division II in 2004, and they've made this transition 8 seasons later of winning their conference and going to the Big Dance. We had a chance to talk to their lead assistant, Coach Rob Plinkefus, and we're going to play this clip, and Devon's going to come back and break them down.
You're on with the Real Sports Guys. This is our remote show, our NCAA preview show. We're with South Dakota State's assistant coach, Rob Klinkefus. Welcome to the show, Coach.
I'm doing great. We appreciate you guys taking the time to have us on.
Well, we're excited about it, and I guess we want to talk about it. I think most people don't have a chance to understand. You know, the brackets come out, they see teams, but they don't understand the journey to getting here. Can you talk about the transformation of the program over the past few years and what you and other coaches and Coach Nagy have been doing to try to get the program where it is today?
I can, you know, and kind of like what you said, it's been a journey, and a lot of people look at it like, you know, we're a one-bit league, so it's a lot of people think, well, it's a three-game journey. But actually, I mean, this baby started about 6 or 7 years ago. You know,
wow.
We decided to go Division I. And when you go Division I, and the commitment's made by the college or the university to go Division I, there's kind of one target that everybody's pointing at, and that's the NCAA basketball tournament. It's kind of the granddaddy of all of them. And, so the journey started and the dream started way back then. And fortunately, we've got a guy who's in charge of our program, Coach Nagy, who's done an unbelievable job of staying the course. Because it wasn't always, I think there's some people out there that are familiar with what went on. I mean, 6 years ago, we had 6 wins, and then it was 8. Then it was 13, then it was 14, then it was 19, now it's 27. You know, and for Coach Nagy to stick it out and for the administration to see that through when it was 6 wins, 8 wins, you know, it's really a tribute to him and our school, I think, for giving us the opportunity to do this the right way. You know, the easy way is probably try to go get some transfers and things like that, but we've done it with 4-year kids and great kids, low-maintenance kids that are gym rats, good students, and love to be part of a Division I basketball program. And that's kind of where we're trying to make our money at, is with those kind of kids. So people talk about the journey being 3 games. It actually started about 6 or 7 years ago, and the last 3 games, that championship game on Tuesday night, was that was the tip of the iceberg there.
And to kind of piggyback on the, you know, how you've built the team, many of your players come from specific areas. I mean, you know,
yep.
you and so can you talk about the areas in which you've been able to pull some of these players out and kind of build a name and build a relationship?
We have most of our roster is made up of kids from the Midwest, Minnesota kids, Iowa kids, South Dakota kids, Wisconsin kids, things like that. We do have one kid from Canada now, but that's, I think it, the reason for that is the way Coach Nagy is, you know, in the Midwest values and things like that are very, very important to my boss and the leader of our program. Hardworking, tough, you know, we like kids that can shoot it, pass it, play the game the right way. And certainly there's those kids all over the country. However, we're located in the Midwest, and we like those values associated with the kids that we're recruiting out of the Midwest, and would like to continue that. And that's the biggest reason for that is we kind of build our program on kids that can shoot it, pass it, play the right way, tough kids, but yet are very good students in the classroom too, and we can win with kids in the Midwest like that.
This is your first ever trip to the Big Dance. Obviously, you beat, you know, Western Illinois in the Summit League Conference Championship game. How have you been able to kind of keep it normal? I mean, when people punch their ticket to the dance, the students are excited, everybody else on campus is excited.
Yep.
How have you been kind of able to keep your players focused and kind of normal for them?
Well, it wasn't very normal after that game for a while, I'll be honest with you. You know, it's just, what a moment, you know, for our state, for our school, for our players, for our coaches, for our alumni, for our fans. Just that moment that everybody's, you know, they wanted to be part of for so long that it just kind of all came boiling out. And which it should have. Now, and that's about as crazy as you'll see our guys or our coaching staff. Coach Nagy's a pretty low-key guy. And if you know our team, I mean, there's not a whole lot that really gets to them. They're pretty low-key also. So I guess it's a pretty simple thing to do with our guys. They understand the importance of it. They understand the excitement of it. That being said, granted, they've looked forward to practice this week, and they've got a little more juice to them, knowing that, you know what, we've got a chance to go in this NCAA tournament, hopefully make some noise, and go in there with the expectations that we're going to play well and win every game. So, you know, this is nothing new. This is nothing new as far as how we approach games. We've played in big games before. Now, this is obviously at a different level, but our kids handle these situations very, very well, and so is Coach Nagy.
When you think about your team as you enter the opening round, for people who are kind of looking and watching your team, what's a key stat that will serve as kind of a litmus test that your team is going to be successful, that things are going in the right direction?
Rebounding.
Rebound.
It's been Coach's trademark since he's been. I've been with him here for 6 years, and so. But I learned it day one. I learned it day one on the job what we were going to be good at or try to be good at, and that's Coach's trademark, and it's the first thing he looks at. When we're really rebounding it well, we've had a very, very good chance of being successful. You know, and to Coach, it's the ultimate stat because it embodies everything that he's about: effort, toughness, flying around, making big plays. And so he associates rebounding with success. And when we're doing that very well, that means we're pretty sharp typically. So that's no question, that's the one landmark trademark that we look at first and foremost.
You're on with the Real Sports Guys. This is our pre-NCAA tournament show. We're on with Rob Klinkenfist for South Dakota State University, the Jackrabbits. We're having a great conversation here. Coach, for people who may not be familiar with your team, can you talk about a few of your players that have really made an impact in your conference play in the tournament that folks, when they're watching, they really got to put some eyeballs on?
I think you know, I think there's a lot of people throughout the country, especially now, that knows about our point guard, Nate Walters.
And, yes.
A great player, one of the best point guards in the country, I think everybody would tell you, and we think so too. Obviously, he's the keys to the car. He makes us go. The ball's in his hands all the time, but he's very good at getting other people involved. He's a very good defender. You know, he's got to be good for us in big games, you know, to be successful. He knows that, we know that, and he's perfectly fine with it. Another one is sophomore on our team, Jordan Dykstra. He plays a 5 for us, gives people a lot of fits because he shoots over 50% from the arc in the league. You know, so we've got the ability to spread some people out and, you know, make some threes and then create some driving lanes also and try to get to that free throw line. We really value the two lines, the free throw line and the three-point line. We try to do both very, very well, and we try to get to both a lot. And it starts with those two, Nate and Jordan, obviously. But then the third guy, and I say third guy when a lot of people tell you number one, and even in our program, that we have to have on the floor and playing well is Griffin Callahan. He's our only senior. But, you know, he didn't get any postseason honors, snubbed out of those, I thought a little bit, I'll be honest. And he didn't make all-tournament team. But all you need to know about him is we're down 2 with 7 seconds left in the conference. Tournament, he gets fouled, goes to the free throw line to make 2 free throws to tie it up to send us to overtime. And then in overtime, with a little over a minute, we're down 1, and he makes a 3 to go up 2. You know, and he's made big shots for us all year. He's the toughest kid. I know Coach Nagy would tell you that he's one of the toughest kids he's ever coached, and he's really the nuts and bolts to our team, the glue. And he always gets the toughest assignment defensively. He can guard anybody. And he's the one guy that people don't know about that we all know how important he is to our team.
Coach, you mentioned that you had one senior, and you played a pretty tough schedule. How have you been able to make your get your team to be focused given the tough schedule you played this year?
There's no question. One very important piece to us continuing to get better as a program is to have juniors and seniors, you know, and have a ton of experience against those high major basketball teams and even older mid-major teams. So that's certainly been a bigger piece. And the nice thing with us is the group that we have, they've been playing, all the guys that play, the sophomores even, the juniors and the one senior, they've been playing since they were freshmen. So they've all logged a tremendous amount of minutes. And, you know, we trust them, I guess. We haven't talked about youth, because we play 4 sophomores and a freshman a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't even use that word anymore in our program,
yes.
Youth. And it's because they played so many minutes, and we trust our guys. We do. We really trust them.
Well, this has been great. One of the things, Coach, we've been doing on the Real Sports Guys is we just ranked the top 50 NBA players of all time. And we had some of a split between Michael Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain. And so in our interviews, when we've been talking to coaches, we wanted to also push them on their historical perspective on the game. When you look at those two players, where do you fall on that? Who would be your number one?
You know, this is an easy one for me. I grew up watching Michael Jordan make shots over Brian Russell and Craig Elo. So this is easy for me. MJ's my guy. Just the way he finished games, and I mean that dude. I don't know. You know, maybe you could make an argument for somebody being in the same class, but I don't know if you can say somebody's better than him. So I'm going with MJ.
Coach, no one can argue with your selection of Jordan. It was great for us to have you on today. The reason why we had you on is we think you can make some noise in the tournament. We're on with South Dakota State University, Rob Klinkefuss. Coach, we want to wish you well. Good luck in the tournament.
Yeah, we appreciate having the opportunity to be on your show, and thank you very much.
All right. That was Coach Rob Klinkefuss for South Dakota State University Jackrabbits. And we're going to go back to Marcus in the studio.
You know, one of the things that I loved about Coach Klinkefuss, I mean, he was probably one of our most engaging interviews. And if you think about South Dakota State, as Phil mentioned earlier, it's only been in Division I for the past 5 years, and they're already punching their ticket. This is an exciting team. They're led by point guard Nate Walters, and this guy's an all-around guard. I mean, he basically is leading them in scoring, assists, and rebounds, 21.3 points per game, six assists per game. Five rebounds. So this is a guy that does it all. So if you don't know about him, you need to check him out. They can shoot it from long range. As Coach said, they want to focus on both lines, on the free throw line and on the 3-point line is where they do it. They got a 6'7" forward sophomore Jordan Dykstra and Braden Carlson. Both of them are shooting around 50% from the 3-point stripe. And so I think this is a team that's going to get after Baylor. Baylor's talented. They have, I think about five players are 6'9 or above, led by sensational sophomore forward, 6'11, Perry Jones III, who is, a dynamic player. They got a dynamic junior guard in Pierre Jackson. I think one of the things that I feel about Baylor is the youth. And this is the kind of team – that can be an upset special for a team like Baylor that's, highly talented. They got the size. On paper, they look like they should dominate in this matchup. But the thing about South Dakota State, the Jackrabbits, they're a scrappy group. They get after you. And I think that this is going to be one of those ones that, I say this is where you might make your money on an upset like this. Because I think that when you have a guy like Nate Walters, this is the kind of guy that's going to could carry you and make things happen for three or four games. This is a big time player. And so, as you look at your brackets, pay attention to it. I think that South Dakota State has the potential to be a bracket buster. I think they can do it. They won eight straight games. They won 23 of their last 27 games. And so this is a team, I think Marcus talked about, when you have those kind of streaks, people understand their roles. They don't get too rattled. They know what they've been doing. They won at Washington, the Pac-10 championship. So this is a team that's tested. They're not going to be scared in a moment, and they're going to get after it. So one of the things that I think that is important is to talk about is that, there's a lot of tournaments that are going on. And so our next one that we want to talk about, we had a chance to interview Yale head coach and to talk about a new postseason tournament. And so we'll give you a chance to hear this interview, and we'll come back and talk about that as well.
We're excited to have Yale Bulldog head coach James Jones hanging out with the Real Sports Guys in our remote studio today. How you doing today, Coach?
I'm doing terrific, Phil.
Coach, congratulations on an awesome season in Ivy League. You guys finished up third, currently sitting at a 19-9 record. You've already accepted a bid to the College Insider postseason tournament. Walk our listeners through that process of finishing the season and then trying to figure out which postseason tournament you want to play in.
Well, when you're in Ivy League, you don't have a postseason tournament, so whoever wins the regular season championship gets to go to NCAA. And there are very few teams that look like us that have ever gotten a bid to the NIT in recent years. So that's a pretty good indication that we're not going to have an opportunity at either one of those tournaments. But luckily, there are two other postseason tournaments, the CBI and the CIT, that we've accepted a bid to that you just mentioned. And they had both given us calls preliminarily about a month ago trying to gauge that if we would have some interest in either one of those tournaments. And, of course, we were excited about it. We certainly wanted to have an opportunity to play an NCAA tournament or the NIT, but, there are going to be about 140 teams playing postseason basketball, and we're going to be very happy to be one of them.
So after a tough road loss, a couple of tough road losses at Wake Forest and Florida, your team then responded to win nine of your 11 next games, which really propelled you to have this fine season. Talk to me a little bit about what happened after those two losses and why your team responded so well.
Well, I thought we played pretty well in both those games. Wake Forest, we had a shot at the buzzer that could have won it. We lost by a point, and you know that was our first game after about an 18-day layover from Christmas. So we didn't really start off well. We missed a lot of shots to start the basketball game, and had we shot it better, might have had a chance to win that one going forward. And then we went on and played Florida, and actually I felt really good about that game. You know, we were down by 10 or so points in the first half and had cut it to, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 or something like that late in the first half, and I ended up getting a technical for nothing. If anybody that knows me knows I'm fairly mild-mannered on the sidelines, and I got a technical for nothing, which boosted Florida ahead. And I'm not saying that we would have won the game, but certainly would have had an opportunity to have a better showing. In any event, I think that when you play teams like that, it gives your teams an opportunity to see what it is that you need to get better at. And I think that we, you know, try to prepare our guys for the next, you know, rest of the season, being exposed a little bit in those two games, and then trying to help us get better. And I think we got better. And I think that's one of the reasons why we were able to win so many games.
Okay. So, Coach, for our listeners out there that may be watching your team here in the next week or two as you all enter the College Insider Tournament, can you identify one key statistic that serves as a litmus test for your team? So if our listeners are watching, what's the one thing your team needs to do to stay competitive to beat anybody on a given night?
Well, you know, you look at it, rebounding the ball is really key. And the thing about rebounding, you know, there's some, you know, three kind of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics. And rebounding the ball has a lot to do with your field goal percentage defense, because if you can, you know, stop people from scoring and rebounding the ball, if you're holding them to a low field goal percentage defense, then you're going to shoot more, then you're going to get more free, then you're going to get more rebound opportunities. In any event, so that statistic is going to be key for us. If we can out-rebound our opponents, that means that we're doing a better job on the boards, but also we're doing a better job on a defensive end. And if we can do that, obviously, you're going to have a chance to beat anybody.
Coach, is there one team out there or a few teams that you think can really make some noise and even make it as far as the Final Four for the NCAA tournament?
Well, you know, one of the great things about, you know, the NCAA tournament is the stories about the Cinderellas, the teams that come from nowhere, and then all of a sudden they're in the Final Four, like BCU and George Mason and Butler. I mean, that makes it great. It makes the little guy feel like he's got a chance. And that being said, I look at Wichita State and what Greg Marshall has done with his team as someone that you need to watch out for in this tournament, that they can go out and get to the Sweet 16 or further and then have a chance to maybe even get into the Final Four if the ball breaks right. You know, they're going to be seeded fairly well. You know, they lost early in their conference tournament, so they're going to be well-rested and a little salty after losing the conference championship, but they won the regular season outright. So I look for them to make some noise and have a chance to do some damage in the tournament.
Coach, for the last couple of weeks, the Real Sports Guys, the three of us, we have been putting together a top 50 player, basketball player of all time, and one of us selected Wilt Chamberlain as number one on that list, and the other two selected Michael Jordan on that list. Who would you select as the top overall player of all time?
Well, top overall player of all time, I have to go with Michael Jordan in terms of what he's been able to do. I was a huge fan as a young man growing up, and he's someone that, you know, you just watch and you just marvel at and what he's able to do. And, you know, you look at Wilt Chamberlain, and he's not someone that most of us have seen play. And, you know, the way he dominated the league was something awesome, but he liked in the championship levels. And I think that was what sets Michael apart from everybody else, his ability to push forward and drive his team to win championships. And I think, again, you know, when you look at it and you look at his teams, some of the guys that were on his team, you know, Scottie Pippen's a top 50 player of all time. And I give that credit to Michael Jordan, not taking away from Scottie Pippen. But if there's no Michael Jordan, I don't believe Scottie Pippen's going to be a top 50 player of all time. In any event, I look at Jordan as being the best player that I've certainly ever seen. And I'd be hard-pressed, and I'm looking forward to finding a guy who takes that title away from him.
Well said, Coach. I was the one guy who picked Wilt, but you may have won me over to the Jordan side with that argument. Well, Coach, thanks a lot for joining us. Again, we just finished chatting up with Yale Bulldog head coach James Jones. And again, Coach, thanks for coming on, and we wish you the best of luck in the College Insider Tournament.
Thank you very much.
Well, let's send it back to the studio to Marcus the Game Changer. Mark?
So that was our interview with Yale Bulldog head coach James Jones. We had a great time talking to Coach, especially, you know, talking about the Michael Jordan argument. Just a quick rundown on Yale's head coach, James Jones. This is his 12th year with Yale, and over the past, over his 12 years with them, he's led them to their only two postseason appearances, including this year, that the program has had in the last 40 to 50 years. They won 19 games this year, and they came in third place in a really tough Ivy League this season. You know, we heard about Harvard, but Yale had a really solid season as well. They lost a close game against Wake Forest. They open up in the CIT, which is they use the old NIT model, so it's kind of hard to see who they're going to play in the next round because that's determined after the first round. But they open up tomorrow, and if you against Fairfield, if you want to watch that game, Yale has a link on their website where you could actually watch that game. Also, Coach Jones' brother is the head coach at Boston University, so they certainly have a basketball family there. So we appreciate Coach for spending the time to talk to us, and we wish them the best of luck in the CIT tournament. So I'm going to send it over to the Game Changer.
All right. Now, we're going to pick this up real quick. We're going to get into our Dog of the Week. But before we do that, before we get into the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week, we want you to hit us up on Facebook and get in. D-Wheels is going to put the link up on the Real Sports Guys Facebook page for our Resistance Digital RSG Attorney Challenge. We have Attorney Challenge. We have some bundles of technological gifts that are being provided by our sponsor, Resistance Digital, that are going to go to the winners of the Attorney Challenge. So feel free to please get signed up. Help yourself out. Get signed up. Get your hands on one of those Resistance Digital bundles. You're going to really enjoy it. It's going to have a lot of goodies in it. But get yourself hooked up, all right? Resistance Digital is our number one sponsor, Dog of the Week. They're sponsoring our Tony Bracket Challenge, so make sure you get in and get signed up for that. That's going to be posted on Facebook today. You get in before Wednesday, before the tournament gets kicked off, or before Thursday, before the tournament gets kicked off, all right? So now, again, a little bit of housekeeping before we get into the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. After hours, okay, for you listeners out there who are still waiting to hear some of the more, we got some more interviews for you. We have VCU assistant coach Mike Rhodes that's going to be checking in with us during after hours. All right, we have an interview with the coach of Colorado School of the Mines, a hot D2 team that is hosting the D2 tournament. They're the number one team in D2. They're holding it down. They're looking to make a long run into the Division II tournament. They're going to be joining us. And then we're going to talk about we're going to play an interview with Western Carolina's coach, Larry Hunter, which is our game of the week. Their double OT loss to Davidson in the Southern Conference final was a huge game. A lot of drama. We're going to get into that. All of that is going to happen during after hours, so please stay with us. All right, about an hour after the show is done, you can click on the link and listen to what happens in the after hours section of the show, or you can download it off of iTunes. But make sure that you check in if you want to hear those interviews. Again, we have VCU coming up. We have Western Carolina's coach Larry Hunter, and we have the Colorado Schools of the Mines coming up as well during the after-hours section. So please check that out. Plus, we have our Final Four predictions. All right? Now, let's get into the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. If you're tired of running to the boys in blue, if you're done listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need, we've all been there. What you need to do is contact Resistance Digital for all your technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or profit margins. They want to provide you with what you need at a fair price, from iPads and PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems. They customize every solution based on your needs. Check out the website at resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right, so let's get into this real quick. Dog of the Week brought to you by Resistance Digital.
It's still going crazy in there. And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no.
All right, so we need you to be a dog. All right? So, D. Wills, who you got? Dog of the week.
My dog of the week, Tom Izzo. The Spartans did their thing, won a Big Ten tournament championship. He did that, building his bench up. Izzo's doing it again. He's mixing it up. He's turning it up. I call him the Mad Chemist.
PhD, your dog of the week.
Peyton Manning, period.
Okay. Game changer, dog of the week. Jay Cutler. Just got reunited with Brandon Marshall. Reunited and it feels so good. They're going to hold it down for the Windy City. That's going to be a team to watch out for in the NFC Central. Or in NFC North, rather. That's the old Central, the new North. All right? So check that out. Again, the end of the live show. It's going into live after hours as we speak. So check us out. Download it. Catch us on iTunes.
You're on with the Real Sports Guys, our pre-tournament show, as we prepare. We're happy to have VCU Rams Associate Head Coach Mike Rhodes on with us. How are you doing, Coach?
All right, doing great. Watching a lot of tape, getting ready for our next game.
That's right. You got the Shockers coming up. Coach, before we get in to talking about your game with the Shockers, one of the things that's been exciting about watching your team is that this team has a different makeup than the team that made the run to the Final Four. You have, you know, one senior, Bradford Burgess, that is your leading scorer, but you have a different makeup to this team. Can you talk a little bit about the makeup of your squad that's getting ready for the tournament?
Sure, you bet. Absolutely. I mean, we have a lot of new faces. We have a lot of guys that have bigger roles and new roles, and you know, Bradford Burgess, who had a great run through the NCAA tournament last year as a junior, is really our only guy back with major, major minutes and, you know, and a huge role in the past. And, you know, of course, we have guys that have stepped up. Darius Theus, who played a great game in the championship game against Drexel. He's been a catalyst for us as this year went on. And then Troy Daniels and Rob Vandenberg, two young guys that roles have stepped up, and then we've gotten great production from some really young guys, Briante Weber and Travian Graham, and of course Javonte Redick and DJ Haley. Those guys have really stepped up, and I don't think anyone thought we'd be in this position. But what I think we did was we just kept getting better every week, every month, and we put ourselves in a position at the end of the year to try to win our league, and we did that.
I mean, when you think about you won six straight games, 17, I believe, of your past 18 games that you played, you certainly put some things together here down the stretch. Folks probably don't realize you're number one in the nation in steals per game and turnover margin. How have you been able to get your team to commit to that style of play?
Well, right from the bat, that was the way we were going to play when Coach got here to VCU and Shaka. You know, this is Shaka pretty much said from day one, this is how we're going to play. We're going to play a fun way. We're going to play a lot of guys. So, number one, we recruited from that way. And then it wasn't, you know, Coach Grant, who's now in Alabama, you know, some of his players that were here when we got here, they were able to play that way. And I think we just ramped it up a little bit more. And, of course, you've heard us say that, you know, coaches' terms, our program and our style, havoc, and a lot of guys play with that approach. And we recruit to it, and then that's how we play every day. We really get after each other every day. We push the ball. We shoot a lot of threes. And I think on one end, we like to say there's a lot of freedom as long as you play together. And the other end, we're going to harass the opponent and make them as uncomfortable as possible. And it's a fun way to play, and I think it's a tough way to prepare and a tough style to play against. And I think it's really helped us and helped us in a lot of areas.
I mean, as you look at your preparing for Wichita State, you know, they have you know, a big fella inside, 7-footer, Garrett Stutz. Talk about how you got that preparation for the game you're preparing for the Shockers.
Well, the only good thing about playing a team like Wichita State is we played them last year in the bracket buster out at Wichita, and we ended up coming out of that with a one-point win. Joey Rodriguez hit two foul shots with eight-tenths of a second left to get a one-pointer and get out of there. So we're both familiar with each other, but we have to do a really good job with our young guys of getting prepared for the moment, to understand that these guys are very, very talented, and they're very good. They've beaten a lot of really good teams this year, played a really tough schedule. So, you know, we have our hands full for sure. But you know, our style of play, and hopefully the way we approach the NCAA tournament and conference tournament, that our guys be prepared and excited. But guarding guys like Ragland and Stutz and a bunch of other guys, they're very talented.
You're on with the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We're on with Mike Rhodes, assistant head coach for the VCU Rams. Coach, 28-6, you're back in the tournament. A lot of folks are highlighting you as a team that can have some success in the first round. You know, how do you feel in terms of that second time around? Expectations are a little bit different. You're not in the play-in game. How have you helped to kind of manage the emotions as you're preparing for this game against the Shockers?
Well, we got to take the same approach that we've been taking all year long, especially having a young team. There'll be some neat things on TV about VCU and on SportsCenter and on the radio about our guys. Let's take that all in, but understand our approach is to win a game over 40 minutes. And the neat thing for our guys that last year, a lot of people said we shouldn't have been in the tournament. Well, this year we took care of that. So there's a confidence there that, hey, we do belong. But everyone's still picking Wichita State and saying we're not going to advance. So we know we're still the underdog, and we're still going to take an underdog approach. But, you know, we don't have to be Wichita State or any teams in our bracket 7 out of 10 times, or it's not a best-of-7 series. It's only one game, and that's the approach. If we can play well and put 40 minutes together, anything can happen.
One of the things, and I think you hit on a really good point, in terms of this whole idea of fighting respect for respect, the Colonial Athletic Association, the CAA conference, last year, like you said, a lot of folks said that you shouldn't have been in the tournament. Y'all used that as motivation to push on and push to the Final Four. You know, when you think about some of your associates, your colleagues at Drexel who didn't get in, what is it going to take for mid-majors to get the kind of respect that you need, given the runs we've seen you make and the runs we've seen Butler make? You know, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, the only way you could change people's thinking is that mid-majors consistently beat high majors over and over again throughout the course of the season. The tough thing is high majors aren't going to schedule very good mid-majors throughout the course of the season. So that's really hard. Anytime a good mid-major can get on the schedule of a high major, you got to take that opportunity and you got to run with it. And then you got to find ways to win those games. That's probably the only way, in my mind. You have your big-time conferences and the traditional powers. Everybody wants to think the same as about those schools, which many of them gain that respect. That's how it goes. I understand that. But I think the scheduling part, you just try your hardest to get in some tournaments with some high majors. You maybe work some relationships where you can get in, get on their floor, you meet a neutral side, or you get a home-and-home, and find a way to play those teams and beat them. But you're right. It's hard. We're trying to break a mold over a long, long time, and people don't like to change like that. They don't want to always see VCU on that primetime spot on ESPN or CBS playing and beating the big timers. But our job is when we get out there and we tip the ball up, doesn't matter who we play, let's be prepared and let's give ourselves a chance to win. And so many mid-majors throughout the country have been doing that the last few years. I feel really bad for Drexel. They put themselves in a great position, and we really thought they were going to get in. They're a very, very good team. And I think if they were in the tournament, you'd be talking about them like you're talking about us, without a doubt.
You're on with the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. Brown, one assistant head coach, Mike Rhodes. Coach, I'm a product of a small liberal arts college environment. And so in some ways your story, you're like a guy at my after my own heart. You started out Division III at Randolph-Macon College, now you're here coaching, about to go into the tournament. You met Coach Smart in Detroit at the Final Four, and then he offered you a job sometime after there. Can you talk a little bit about what it's been like to work with Coach Smart?
It's been phenomenal. You know, over the course of the last 3 years, not only did I worked for a guy that I truly respect, and the way he goes about things is what I believe in. I've gained a great friend. We spent so much time together, our coach and staff, and our approach is hands-on with our players. We spend so much time with our players. We've built, you build great relationships with the guys you work for. And I think one of the greatest strengths of our program, besides the kids and how good of kids we have in our program, is how well our coaching staff gets along and how we look after each other. And that's led by Shock. His leadership skills for a young coach are off the charts. And the way he can make environments so, coach-friendly and player-friendly has been a lot of fun. I knew Shock a little bit before he got this job at VCU, and just running into him on the road. We had some mutual friends, and I was at Randolph-Macon for 10 years as the head coach. I got the job at 25. I was Coach Nunley, Hal Nunley's assistant, and Randolph-Macon, his coach, had to retire because of his health, and I thought I would be moving on to a low Division I school and try to work up the ranks of college coaching. And the Coach Nunley came down in my office in May of 96 and said, I have to retire because of my health. The president's going to call me and offer a job. And that started my coaching career as a head coach. And I always wanted to move up the ladder, but I was in a great place, and I'm a big small college fan. It's a great I think it's a high quality basketball and some great coaches. And I could have been around all thinking forever, but I had this itch. And when Shaka got to VCU, I'd love to get on his staff. It's a possibility. We met at the Final Four in Detroit. I'm a Villanova fan, growing up being outside of Philadelphia where I grew up. And Villanova was in the Final Four that year, and I didn't see 1 second of that game. I was meeting in a restaurant with Shock, and we went from there. About 2 days later, I came down to VCU. I'm only about 50 minutes away. Randolph-Macon's pretty close. We sat down, we talked again. He offered me a job, and I took it, and it was one of the best decisions I've ever made. It's a pretty neat story, because sometimes you think you're not sure if you're going to get opportunities, but I think if you just keep plugging along, keep believing, keep meeting people, you keep trying to fight the right fight, some good things happen, and I'm truly blessed.
That's an incredible point, Coach, and we appreciate having you on the show. And one of the things we want to do before we let you go, on the Real Sports Guys, we've been ranking the top NBA players of all time, and we split on Wilt and Michael, and we've been asking all the coaches we've been talking to, all you coaches are hoop historians. And so,
absolutely.
When you think about the best player of all time, Wilt or Jordan, or do you have someone else you probably place as the best player of all time in the NBA?
I was a Jordan fan growing up. I'm not a Carolina fan, but I was a Jordan fan. so I have to go with Jordan. I would say I was a Boston Celtics fan growing up, so I always heard all these stories about Bill Russell. So I don't know if individually, you can't go wrong with those two. I would give it to Jordan, but I think Bill Russell's pretty darn close because of how many games he's won, and he did it without scoring. So, but I'll take Jordan. I can't, my players here. If I picked somebody else, those guys would probably beat me up. So I'm gonna stick with Michael Jordan, like so many other people.
Well, Coach, I went with Jordan. Yeah, I went with Jordan. I think great minds think alike. So I am.
You got that right.
I'm certainly glad you did it. I definitely want to wish you well against the Shockers.
You.
You're one of the teams that I believe can make some noise. And thank you for coming to the show. We hope we can have you back.
Oh, anytime. Anytime. I'd love to. Anytime we can talk hoops and VCU basketball and doing it the right way. Hey. Hit me up anytime. I'd love to be on your show.
All right, this is Associate Head Coach Mike Rhodes with the VCU Rams. They're going to be playing the Wichita State Shockers. It's going to be a great game. We're looking forward to it. You're with the Real Sports Guys. This is our pre-show tourney special. We're excited, and we'll catch you next time with our next coach. Looking forward to it. Until next time.
All right. Did coach, associate head coach Rhodes say he's going to hit you up, D-Liv?
Yeah, he did. We've developed a good relationship. This is Phil T and Coach Rhodes. He's a cool guy, man, real cool guy.
Yeah, yeah. So getting into VCU, again, this is a team I as I told the fellas off air, this is a team I feel viscerally connected to, man. You know, last year, PhD and I and a group of fellows, we took a bit of a journey up to a tournament site in Chicago, and we were able to catch VCU last year at the very beginning of their run through the tournament. When we watched them play against, they defeated Georgetown, and then they played Purdue the next day, and we got to see both of those games. And in those games, you saw it right away. They had a specific style of play. They were very in-your-face defensively. They really got out and pressured you and took you out of things that you want to do. And they got after you. They just had a mentality. You know, we talk about the dog meter. That team and that program seems to have their dog meter up all the time. So, you know, that's if my ideal basketball team would play the way VCU plays. They get out and pressure you. They get out and attack you. I feel like I'd have been a good player in that system. That system would have been made perfectly for my skill set and my talent. So I love watching them play. I think Shaka Smart's a rising star in the coaching ranks. You know, I think, you know, the Illinois job is open. He may take a look at that. Some other jobs may open up. Some other high-profile jobs may open up. And I think he's going to have his pick of where he wants to go. Maybe he decides he wants to stay at VCU until that particular job that he wants. Who knows what his dream job is, but that, you know, he's going to have that opportunity. And, you know, Mike Rhodes, the associate head coach, the man we talked to, possibly maybe stepping in as a head coach in a year or two, maybe even as soon as a couple months. So it was really good to have him on. We appreciate Coach Rhodes stepping in and getting on with the Real Sports Guys, off some excellent insights. I have VCU down as my sleeper. I have them getting to the Sweet 16 again this year in all of my brackets. I think they're going to take down Wichita. I do hate that they put two mid-majors against each other in the first round, two quality mid-majors. I would like them to give both of them an opportunity to play somebody else instead of going up against another mid-major. But it is what it is. I think VCU is going to win the game. Why do I think VCU is going to win the game? Right now, they are playing very good basketball, and the key to their whole system is pressure, pressure, pressure. Pressure busts pipes, and VCU brings that pressure. Lead the country in steals per game, lead the country in turnover margin. They get after you. They are a young team. They have one senior, but their senior is a ball player, Bradford Burgess. This cat played a key role last year. He was kind of more of a supporting player, but he was still an integral part of what they did. This year, he's kind of taken that next step and become the guy. He has really taken over as the number one offensive option, but he does a little bit of everything for that team, and he provides the most key and most important thing you need in a tournament is leadership. They are a young team. They play at a frantic pace. That may be their one Achilles heel, is that their youth, you know, and the pace that they play at. They may get caught up in moments and make poor decisions, but I think overall they're going to force teams into a lot of bad turnovers. The other thing that may affect them a little bit is that they're not as good of a shooting team as they were last year. Last year, the cats that they had were lights out, just lights out, and they had that look about them like they were guys who made big shots on a regular basis. This team has a similar look, but I think they're more slashers. They're more about getting to the basket. They're more about attacking. Again, across the board, they're a really deep team. They're really loaded. They get up and down the court. They play a fast-paced style. Again, I have them going to the Sweet 16. I really like their chances to make some noise in the tournament. D. Wills, where are you sitting with VCU right now?
Well, I think your analysis was spot on. I think the key is their ability to put on that ball pressure. I mean, when you look at Garrett Stutz, and I talked to Coach about that a little bit. You know, you have a 7-footer that can have an impact inside. I believe that he can be a game changer if he has a good game, and it can cause them some problems in terms of affecting their ability to score. But I think, one of those things, I think one of the things that's hard to analyze when you're trying to set up brackets is that dog meter, that heart. They play with the personality of their coach. And I think that's part of the puzzle that they look at. I have them getting past Wichita, and part of it is that they're tournament tested. They're ready for this. You know, even though they have one senior, they have enough players who at least have experienced this and watched it in a way that Wichita State hasn't. And I have them getting past the first round, but then losing the second round to Indiana. And there's some reasons why I think that Indiana might cause them some problems in that second round a little bit. But I think that, I think that their seeding was not – It's again, the issue that you have with mid-majors for both of it, it's tough that these two have to match up early on. But I like what they do in terms of ball pressure. As you said, in terms of where they rank in terms of steals, their turnover ratio. And so they're going to get after it. So I think I got them with the first round upset. I do have them losing the second round. But I wouldn't be surprised if they went two rounds.
Now, let's talk about Shaka Smart real quick because, the Illinois job is available right now. The Northwestern job may open up. There may be some other jobs that open up as the spring progresses. Kind of what do you see his upside? What do you think he's looking for if you were to kind of gauge kind of where's a good fit for him as far as conference, type of school, environment. He's thrived at VCU, kind of developed his chops. He won't be the first coach to go through the VCU ranks. Jeff Capel came through there. Anthony Grant, who's now at heading up the head man at Alabama, came through the VCU coaching ranks. VCU has positioned itself as a school for up-and-coming young coaches. Where do you see Shaka? I think Shaka has really kind of taken it to another level as far as raising his profile on a national scale with that Final Four run. What do you see his prospects?
Well, I think the Illinois job is a good job, and ever since Lou Henson left Illinois, in that they fractured their relationship with the Chicago League, Illinois struggled to like maintain its base. What Shaka brings is a style of play that young kids will want to come and play with. I think he, his Midwest roots allows for him to really get in the Midwest and begin to, work that St. Louis area, work the Chicago area. And if you think about it, I mean, when Illinois was at its best, it got a good crop of kids from Chicago. It always got some kids from downstate who could add a little bit more flavor. And then it always got at least one kid, one person that might have been a Midwest, maybe from Detroit, maybe from somewhere else, that might have added a little bit of flavor on top of it. And I think he could really help reestablish the recruiting pipeline to Illinois. There's no reason why Illinois should ever be below 3 or 4 in the Big Ten. It just shouldn't happen. And so I think that's a hot kind of kind of place for him to be. He's ready for that type of job, just because I think he has the charisma, in the ability, in the vision, and the thing that you said, that kids play hard for him. There's something about that. You can watch all college kids don't play hard for every coach, but they seem like they want to win for him. And to me, that says something about his ability to coach.
Agreed. I think that's one of the keys to coaching is getting kids to
to really get down and get dirty for you. And I think Shaka does that. And I hope he does get the Illinois job as a Chicago kid at heart. It'd be great to see Illinois kind of regrow its roots back into the city. You know, if you recruit Chicago, you recruit Peoria, and you get a couple kids out of East St. Louis and St. Louis, you got a squad.
That's it.
You know,
it's like
that's the formula.
That's the formula. Like what I said at Michigan, everybody's like, how do you win at Michigan? What you do? Michigan's formula was get the top two out of Detroit, get a kid from the western part of Michigan, Grand Rapids, Kalamazoo, and get two or three kids from Flint. And then if you want to, you can capture somebody from around the country. But you can do it. The formula is there. You know, if Michigan, more so than Michigan State, would get a kid out of California, get a kid out of Texas, get a kid out of, you know, Massachusetts, and they got Romeo Robinson. But, you know, every team has its formula. That, you just got Illinois' formula. That's Illinois' formula. And they haven't been able to execute it because they don't have anybody charismatic enough to work with those Chicago the public school coaches.
Absolutely.
So I think he can do it.
I think he can, too. Now, we're going to transition. We're going to start to talk about Colorado School of Mines. It's Division II school.
I'm just saying yes, as you said.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we're going to get into it. You excited? Okay. He was testifying over there. Okay. Call me off guard a little bit, man. Call me off guard for a moment, man.
It's in the roots, baby.
Brother started testifying in the middle of the show. I was like, what you got? You got something to say? All right, we're going to keep it rolling, though. We're going to keep it rolling. So we got Pryor Orser, head coach of Colorado Schools of the Mines, which is preparing. They're the number one team in Division II in the country. They're preparing to play for the third time this year. Number 13, Metro State in the region. Regional championship of the Division II NCAA tournament. The winner of this tournament is going to get to advance and play in the Elite Eight in Highland Heights, Kentucky, on the 21st of March. And then they'll get to play in the Final Four. So, big game for Colorado School of Mines. We're going to get into the audio, and then we're going to kind of talk about the school a little bit more because it's a real interesting academic environment. Plus, you have high-level athletics. So, you know, that's a great mix for us here at RSG. So we're going to get into that real quick. I'm going to play the interview, and then I will let D-Wills and I will get into kind of what they got going on as far as their D2 program.
You're listening to the Real Sports Guys remote access pre-NCAA tournament interviews. This is Devon Wilson with the Real Sports Guys. And there's a lot going on as we talk about March Madness. But I think it's important to understand that there are a number of incredible tournaments happening with the NCAA. And today we have the pleasure of having Division II number one ranked Colorado School of Mines head coach, Coach Orser, on. This is an amazing kind of experience when you think about the academic rigor of this institution and the fact that they've been having an amazing run. So we're happy to have Coach Orser with us. How you doing, Coach?
Good. I'm great. Thank you, and I apologize for my voice. There's just been too many games as of late.
Well, hey, Coach, when you think about the fact that you have 29 wins, I can understand why your voice is a little bit hoarse.
Right, exactly.
Talk about your amazing run this year and just maybe just summarize what the experience has been like for your team and the fact that you're hosting a regional tournament at your place.
Well, I think I can only think of one word. It's surreal. I mean, it's just been amazing, and, you know, we've had so much fun on this run, and, you know, this run didn't just start this year. It started a few years back, and it really started when I came here and just building the foundation of toughness and unselfishness, and, you know, and I think this is a culmination of it, and we just seem to recruit a little better player every year, and, you know, we play a really good style. It's not like we pass the lines off the ball and, you know, shoot the ball with one on the shot clock every time. We play great defense, but we still push the ball. We still play a great style of basketball for our players. And, you know, I think it's really, really fun for them. And then, obviously, you know, with our win streak and what we're doing, it's just been amazing. And it's great for our school, great for our campus. You know, obviously, our school gets a lot of notoriety because of our great engineering here, but it's also now that we can get all of that, plus having a very, very good basketball team, it's just icing on the cake.
Well, I mean, Coach, it's definitely been recognized, your work in terms of being selected as Coach of the Year for the last 2 years in the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference. You know, I guess, you know, definitely your peers are respecting what you've done to actually do this. You know, we've had a chance to, I had a chance to look at a little bit of video of Brett Green, the Player of the Year, who's a son of a petroleum engineer, which I love. This is love to anybody who needs to be a student athlete. Can you talk a little bit about what he's meant to your program and what he's meant to your team?
Well, everything. That's all I can say. And, you know, Brett's one of these guys that probably could have played a lot of different places, but he wanted engineering. And it was a situation where Brett probably looked at it and says, I probably won't be playing in the NBA, so why not go to the Colorado School of Mines and major in engineering and get one of the best engineering degrees? You know, and our petroleums here make between $80,000 and $100,000 a year, first year out, at least kids that's gone through my program that's majored in petroleum engineering. So it's a no-brainer. Then also to play, you know, for a school with, you know, that has a good basketball program as well as getting a top-notch engineering degree. It's just, you know, obviously it was him. It was a no-brainer for him. But for him, his character, he's highly, highly competitive. He's extremely dedicated. He's very, very tough. And, I mean, he's just a very, very good player. But all through it all, he's very unselfish. And, I mean, he's one of the best players I've ever coached. And he's so efficient. He'll get you double-figure points on single-digit shots almost every night. And he's had to play against some outstanding athletic players. And if he gets eight, it's okay. We still win.
Coach, in addition to, you know, Brett, to kind of give our listeners a sense of other people that might be in your team that contributed, you know, to this 18-0 home winning streak at Lockridge Arena, who are some of the other folks on your team, some of the players that as you progress, as people pay attention to your roster, that people need to pay attention to?
Well, the other guy is our senior, Dale Mitchwainer. And, you know, Dale was freshman of the year. He was MVP. You know, 2 years ago we were in divisions. He was East Division Player of the Year. Last year he was an All-RMAC guy. And Brett just had a little bit better year. But Dale is an outstanding player. And, I mean, he's a, you know, he's 6'6", but he's long. He's a very, very good athlete. I mean, he's had some dunks on ESPN already this year. You know, he's a high flyer. And, I mean, and he was also MVP of our RMAC tournament. So, I mean, he's one that's just great. And, you know, and he's a multidimensional guy. He can play the four or the five, and he's just a very, very difficult guard for people. You put a big on him, he goes by him. They put a little on him, he can, you know, take him down there and post him up. He's got jump hook games. He goes left, he goes right. You know, he's got a really soft touch around the basket. So, I mean, he's obviously the number two guy right there. I think when we submitted him for the Player of the Year, it was like 1A, 1B, and they're not very far apart. Some other guys that are really good around him is, you know, we've got another freshman that's very good, Trevor Ritchie. He's just a very, very good player. Another freshman that comes off the bench who's a very difficult guard, this kid named Ryan Muller. And then, you know, we got a big boy inside named Trevor Wages. You know, he's 6'8", 245, but he's got 7'1 wingspan. And he is a very, very good post defender. He's an outstanding rebounder. So, and then we have a bunch of other players that are, you know, our point guard play is outstanding. Our senior point guard, Chris Katama. So, and then there's other role players like Luke Meisch and Nico Mucci and Jacob Case. These guys all give us a great team, you know, and, you know, they're all unselfish guys, and they all can defend, and they all do something special to make our team really good.
We're on with Coach Orser. This is the Real Sports Guys, where we're doing our pre-tournament special, and we're talking about the Colorado School of the Mines, who is the number one ranked Division II school in the country. They're hosting a regional against Metro State, who's number 13. I know you have to get ready for practice, and we do certainly appreciate it, and we'd love to have you back on with us. Thank you for joining us on the Real Sports Guys. We got Coach Pryor Orser for the Colorado School of the Mines. Good luck, Coach, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Again, excellent work, D. Wills.
And that was D. Will talking with Pryor Orscher, head coach of Colorado School of Mines, who was scheduled to play tonight. They faced off against Metro State, which is ranked number 13 in Division II. Colorado School of Mines was number one. And unfortunately, Metro State took the game, won by 9 points, 73-64, knocked off the Diggers, knocked them out of the tourney. But we do thank Coach Orscher for taking out the time to come in and join us as his team was making a run deep into the Division II tournament, which is a very, very tough tournament. It has a real interesting format. You get to host a region if you're the number one team in your region. You get to host games, which adds a great – it creates a great environment when you have, you know, a home team, a home school that can host. You know, their fans are really – involved and engaged. I've witnessed it firsthand. I had a brother who played Division II basketball, went on to State University where they had a heck of a run of three national championship appearances. And just being able to see the atmosphere around Division II athletics was really something to see. So, again, hats off to the Diggers for a great season. You know, Coach talked about some of his players. He talked about Chris Kutama, the guard. Looks like he had a rough game tonight. He only played 17 minutes. I'd imagine he got into some foul trouble. Metro State had some pretty athletic guards who seemed like they did a good job of putting some pressure. You know, athletic is sports code for black. Real sports guy, Renegade Radio.
The Evans kid is a high flyer for Metro State. Y'all have to see. I was looking at some stuff. He had in the previous game. He had a dunk that was straight nasty. And so he had like 22 tonight. So he's a player.
Yeah, and it looks like Metro State did something right because the Diggers didn't shoot well from the floor, but. You know, their calling card had been their versatility and their ability to shoot and defend, and they've done a good job of doing that all season. Again, hats off to them. A tough loss, tough way to end the season, but I think, you know, before we put a bow on the season, I want D. Wills to kind of talk about the balance of academics and the quality of academics and how they mix the academics and athletics at the School of Mines.
I mean, I think you have to look no further when you think about Colorado School of Mines in terms of them being one of the top five engineering schools in the country. I think they only accept, 2% of the application pool. But there's an incredible video. They do footage. Brett Green, who was the player of the year in the conference, he's a petroleum engineer. And this kid was talking about how you solve our gas crisis. And he said, you know, we're talking about laying 2,000 miles of pipelines, all we need to do to solve our gas crisis. And, you know, he said there's a lot of pushback, but we already have 600,000 miles of gas line, and all we need is 2,000 more to solve it. And, you know, to understand that at the same time, to lead your team in scoring and to be the player of the year in the conference, to juggle academics is something that's really amazing. And when you think about what Coach is talking about, you know, in his first 11 seasons, seven of those seasons he's had the freshman of the year. And so this is, I mean, when you talk about student athletes, I think the reason why we want to focus and feature this school is because they are doing what it means to be a student athlete. And I want to put our hats off to Coach Pryor Orscher, who was Coach of the Year in the conference, you know, to say that we look forward to having him back on our show.
Absolutely. Now, I'm going to swing this one to my man, PhD. PhD, and he's going to get us set up for this the Western Carolina, Larry Hunter, their head coach interview. So go ahead, PhD.
So now we're moving on to our Real Sports Guys Game of the Week. And, again, you're listening to the after show. For those that didn't get this live, this is the after show. So you downloaded via iTunes or went back to the link. Perhaps you went to our new website of realsportsguys.com.
Yeah, as they say in the streets, after the show is the after show. You know, they say after the party is the after party.
Western Carolina. Western Carolina played against Davidson in their conference championship, and I watched it on ESPN early last week. Western Carolina was down by 13 points with 2 minutes and 47 seconds left, and they came back and tied it up. It was hectic. They came back and tied it up, and they forced one overtime. Then they forced a second overtime. So let's listen to the head coach of Western Carolina, Larry Hunter, talk about that game.
We've got Western Carolina head coach Larry Hunter in the Real Sports Guys studio. How you doing today, Coach?
I'm doing good, Phil. Thank you.
Coach, you and your teams officially started off March Madness a couple of days ago. You and Davidson squared off in the Southern Conference Final to the tune of a double overtime game. Your team fought back after being down 13 points with just under 3 minutes left in the game. Coach, walk me through the last couple of minutes of regulation as well as the overtimes in terms of how you were instructing your troops.
Well, you know, it had been a pretty well-played game from both teams' perspective. Just a good basketball game, really competitive, and you know, guys just going at each other. So that kind of set the tempo. And of course, you were playing for that NCAA berth in the conference championship. And you know, the game was getting away from us a little bit. They had executed pretty well. And, you know, basketball is a game of momentum, and they had hit kind of a momentum streak and opened up a 10, 11 point lead there, maybe even a 13 point lead. It's hard to keep it all straight now. But I remember at the timeout, you know, we talked about, I looked at our guys, and some guys were starting to cramp up. We were, you know, we were really fatigued. You could see it. And I just told them, I said, I know you're tired, but you're playing for an awful lot. You've worked so hard to get here. Dig down deep and find whatever energy you got and compete your doggone heads off. And, you know, stranger things have happened. Make some plays and hit some shots, and let's see what happens. And that's kind of what we went about doing. I think we got to the foul line. We got a couple steals. Trey Summer, our point guard, hit two big threes. He actually banked one of them in. But that's just kind of the mindset we were in. And then, you know, got it right down to the final few seconds. And Keaton Cole, our real good shooter, got fouled on a three-point attempt. And he made all three threes, all three free throws to send it to the first overtime. So, you know, that gave us a little shot in the arm. We get to the overtimes. And I've never seen, Trey Summer to me is the ultimate warrior. We've known this. The 2 years that he's been here, he's just so competitive, and he's just such a tough kid. But he had cramps in his calves and in his thighs. My assistant coaches were rubbing the knots. You know, you've had cramps before. You know how your muscles just knot right up. And he would kind of limp out of the huddle, and he was not drawing attention to himself in the timeout. You know, it wasn't like he was pointing to the trainers. He was just sitting there. He was focused on what we were talking about, and he didn't say anything. He just got right back up, went out there. And I remember, he limps back out on the floor, and then the young man he was guarding goes over a ball screen with the dribble.
Okay.
Somehow he fights up over that and moves his feet and gets in front of him. I thought, oh, my gracious, I can't believe it. But just really, really proud of our guys. You know, we got it. We made some plays. I thought we had it won at the end of the first overtime. Haruna Mutombo got a steal, and he flipped it back. He saved it out of bounds and flipped it back into Keaton Cole right at the basket, and one of their players made a great block where that was going to be the ball game because it was tied at that point. And then it went into the second overtime. And, I think the crowd and the people who were watching the game just fed off of how hard we were competing and how we just would not give in. And the determination, the will to win that we had. And I told him in our last timeout there, it was 13 seconds. I called timeout with 13 seconds to go. And we were down two. I said, guys, we're not going to go for the tie. We're going to go for the win. And then, you know, how you do as a coach, you try to set the stage, you know, said that, you know, we're gonna execute this play. We're going to get Keaton Cole a wide-open jumper, and we're gonna be celebrating here in a few minutes. So we did everything but celebrate. Keaton got a great look at it, and he's hit those shots for us all season long, and this one just didn't go down. But we gave it a great effort.
Coach, I saw your team play earlier in Purdue. You guys came really close to pulling it out in West Lafayette. Then you kind of had a lull where you went in a slump throughout the season. But then you finished out the season strong. Seven straight wins. You made it to the conference finals, even though you weren't a top seed. Talk about the transformation of your team the last couple of weeks of the season.
Well, actually, the last month. We had lost, I think, six games by five or fewer points there and lost a little confidence. And, you know, we didn't hit some big shots. But we were close, so we still kept believing, and that's a credit to our young team. We have a fairly young team. And we just said we just needed to catch fire, and, you know, for whatever reason, I know what it was, our two seniors, Haruna Mutombo and Keaton Cole, and our point guard, Trey Sumber, all three really stepped up their efficiency of production and their production overall. And they really became just really, really much different players the last month of the season. And then that helped some of our younger guys fill into their roles, and they weren't playing with so much pressure. Towatsky King, our postman, really blossomed the last half of the year. So put all those things together, we gained some confidence. We won some close games. We got on the win streak, and you know how you get in that mindset that we went into the tournament thinking we could win it. And so that's kind of where we were at the end of the year. We were a pretty good basketball team when it was all said and done.
Coach, is there one team out there that you like to win the NCAA tournament, which starts next week?
Well, you know, I think there's always several that can do it, but I like Syracuse. I think they've had a great year. They're in a good mindset. They've won close ball games. You know, they have a good depth. They play that zone, which gives people some problems. They're long. They're playing good defense. Obviously, Kentucky's another one. You know, I don't think you can ever count the Dukes or North Carolinas out. As far as a dark horse, I early in the year, I really liked Creighton. But I think they've tailed off a little bit. But there'll be somebody that slips up through there that you don't expect them to. But those would be my top teams.
Coach, I grew up in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where Western Michigan's at. That is MAC country. So I remember Gary Trent. When you were coaching at Ohio, they call him the Shaq of the MAC. Talk a little bit about Gary Trent.
Well, Gary was just honored at Ohio University. They retired his number, and it was a great day for him and for Ohio basketball. But Gary was just an unbelievable physical specimen.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was like 6'8", 250 pounds, probably should have been a heavyweight boxer. Unbelievably good hands and quick hands and quick feet. But he had a 45-inch vertical. Even in college, he bench pressed like 430 pounds. I think he got it up over 500 when he got in the pros. But just think of that. he was just so powerful and explosive. I remember that several times, when his teammates would miss free throws, we would almost smile on the bench because real consistently he would get the offensive rebound and just put it back in for a two. So we would miss the one-point free throw and get two out of it. So, you know, he was very intimidating. He had that intimidating look about him. People would hang on his arms, and he would take them right up and dunk on them and then just kind of stare at them a little bit. And it was a very, very special player. He had a great mentality. He just wanted to kick your butt, and, you know, one of those kind of guys. So that, you know, he loved to compete, and he was tough. And, you know, when we won the preseason NIT, you know, we were the first team, I think Butler's done it since, but we were the first mid-major team to win two road games. We won at Ohio State and at 11th-ranked Virginia before we got to New York. And, you know, in that final game, I think he went 13 for 13 and had like 22 rebounds.
I remember that game.
Yeah.
So, Coach, the host and the Real Sports Guys,
we've been going back and forth. We put together a list of our top 50 players of all time. A couple of us selected Will Chamberlain. A couple of us selected Michael Jordan. Who do you think is the best player of all time?
Oh, my. Well, you know, Kobe's creeping up in there, too. But, you know, if you talk about individual players, it would be probably Michael Jordan. But, you know, the guy I'm going to tell you, Bill Russell, because I'm a coach. And a coach likes to win championships, and I think basketball is the ultimate team game. And that son of a gun, you know what, he won two NCAA championships. He won, what, 12 or 13 NBA championships. You know, he was just the epitome of, if you had to look up in the dictionary the word winner, his name's probably right there beside it. So, you know, he knew how to elevate his teammates' play, and he knew how to win ball games and impact games so that his team would win. And, so he would be my favorite. People probably don't even remember him.
Coach, it's been great talking to you. Western Carolina's head coach, Larry Hunter. Thanks for stopping by. It was so enjoyable watching your team earlier this week. Have a great offseason, Coach.
Thanks, Phil. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, let's send it back to the studio to mark the game changer. Now, while I enjoyed talking to all the coaches this week, Coach Larry Hunter, he just reminded me of my high school coach. You know, the first 20 minutes of practice, Coach would just sit down on the table and tell us stories, and he would just captivate us, Coach Don Jackson. You know, Larry Hunter, when he was telling the story about Gary Trent, you know, it just took me back to my childhood, remembering the Sports Illustrated where they had Gary Trent on the cover, the Shaq of the Mac. And he laid out that game of the week so well, talking about the guys, the Cramps. I was watching that game on ESPN, and everything that he said, I was sitting there on my couch watching it. And, you know, he just made it so articulate, you know, just made the words jump out, you know, almost onto a page. So we want to thank Coach Larry Hunter, the head coach at Western Carolina, for coming on talking about the game of the week, the double overtime loss to Davidson in the conference championship. But now we're going to transition. We got about 7 or 8 minutes left in the show. We're going to transition to our final four selections. And I'll go first, especially because, you know, I've got some provocative statements here to make. But I like Ohio State, Michigan State, Kentucky, and University of Detroit. I'll just toss it to Marcus right now.
Wait, Kentucky and Michigan State? Is that what you said?
I said Ohio State, Michigan State, Kentucky, and University of Detroit. That's what I said, brother.
He donated money this year. He donated money.
Hey, we'll take it. We'll take it. How much you putting in the collection plate, partner?
But like this, we're the last ones left to get those top two spots in the tourney challenge because I want a host going to be way out.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Gary Sanchez.
This is going to be feast or famine. You either going to win big or you going home early. Oh, man. But you know what, man? Again, Michigan State, I can't argue. I'm not going to argue with that one. That's a decent pick. Izzo is due. You know, he's due. You know, he gets there every 3-4 years, so he's due. He's got a senior class that needs to get that Final Four trip. Kentucky, I'm in on you with that one. Ohio State, not so much. I can understand it, but I'm just not sold on them cats.
Give me 60 seconds. So I like you, Adi. If you look up and down their roster, these are kids, you know, Coach McCallum. McCallum has put together a really nice group of players, and preseason they were picked to win the Horizon League, even over Butler. And it has some transfers, you know, coming in. You know, even Holman started off at Syracuse. Doug Anderson came from JUCO. You know, they have 4 or 5 guys. Lowe, their great defensive player, started off at Western Michigan. This is his first season with that team, I believe. It took a while for this team to mesh. And when they finally got it together, because they won 10 of the last 11 games, they
They beat Velpo, a team that had beat them twice. They beat them by 20 in the conference tournament. And I'm telling you, this Doug Anderson kid, he makes dunks and plays that just energizes arenas. Not teams, not benches, arenas. So trust me, you're going to be getting a text, oh, my God, Kansas is down by 7 with 3 minutes left. Who are they playing against? University of Detroit, period.
Check, please. Well, check, please.
Hey. Okay, so since you laid it out like that, when Detroit's getting that backside kick by about 30, at the, I'm going to send you a text. Well, you got 3 out of 4.
Yeah.
You can still hope for it. Well, somebody's going to be right, somebody's going to be wrong. We'll see. We'll
you
see.
Know what, Marcus?
Oh.
I'll take it.
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It's
getting
well,
the people going.
That's right. Get
the
people going, baby.
All right.
I'll give my final four real quick. I got UK, so I'm with you there, Phil T. I got UK. I got Syracuse. I had Syracuse. I'm going to have to really reassess that. I'm going to have to look up that matchup. There's some teams that I had matched up pretty closely with them in that bracket. I'm going to have to look at that and kind of rethink that. But I had Syracuse in there. That's one I'm going to have to rethink. We're losing Fab Melo because I think that does take away a lot from that team. Then I got UNC and Missouri. So I got UK, UNC, Missouri, and Q's with a question mark right now. Have at me.
All right. You have Missouri.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I can see Missouri, man. I mean, Missouri got some – the problem is that my sense with Missouri and watching them, they like to just pull it up and shoot it up. And if they don't – sometimes they remind me of what I call that Duke philosophy where, you know, certain styles play well in the regular season, but do they play well in the tournament? And I'm that's the part I'm not sure about. But
yeah, the reason I like this particular team is because of their chemistry. You know, I've listened to the coach, Coach Hayes, talk about this team, and he talked about how close-knit they are. And for me, that's a key to a good tournament run. That's why I think Missouri, guard-led, a lot of guards, ball handling and adjusting to different things is really important. So that's why I got Missouri. I'm going to let you go ahead and get yours in, D. Wills.
All right, mine's Kentucky, Michigan State. I'm messed up on this one. It's really going to be North Carolina and Vanderbilt.
Dandy. He's sneaking one in.
Yeah,
Explain.
I think, you know, Vandy, you know, played a great game against Kentucky. I think they got some guys who can score. They can play with some size, and it's kind of been a program that's been percolating. And I got a feeling that as I look at the matchups just work in their favor. And I think by the time they get to Elite Eight, their confidence is going to grow. It's already grown with beating Kentucky, but I think they got some early round matchups. I think they can get past Wisconsin, Harvard. You know, I just think it sets up right. I think Kansas State is going to beat Syracuse. I think Vandy can beat Kansas State. And then I think, you know, then they go up against Ohio State. And I think they can beat Ohio State. Ohio State, they come there. I just think that not having a point guard who can score a little bit is going to hurt you.
All right. So there you have it. Again, make sure you jump in and get signed up for the Resistance Digital RSG Tourney Challenge. Again, make sure you get in and sign up with that. Check our Facebook page, Real Sports Guys on Facebook. Also, big thank you to all the coaches who did interviews with us and all the SIDs who got us hooked up with the coaches. Greatly appreciate that. Really added a lot to our show tonight. Hope the listeners out there really enjoy the insights of the coaches. We tried to bring it, tried to give you across the board look at some of the bracket busters. Try to give you a look at some of the other tournament teams that are out there in different tournaments outside of NCAAs. Again, this is Sports Christmas, right? Sports Christmas.
okay? And we try to wrap it up in pretty bow for you all. Thank you again for listening. RSG, Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio, signing off.